Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, welcome to Get Back Normal Wednesday. I am so sick of all the problems, so sick of the hassles, I'm so sick of COVID, I'm so sick of Dr. Fascist, that nasty little monster that's trying to dominate the world, you know, for his own just massive megalopolis ego. I'm sick of a lot of things. And so today I thought I'd have some fun. So I've been talking to a new friend of mine, Cindy Ann Scott, and husband Matt, who just joined us on the line. Actually, I got both of them here, which is great. We're going to have some fun this morning. We're going to talk drag racing. We're going to talk racing in general. I'm going to ask all kinds of silly questions like, are these guys faced with electric engines and the global warming wackos and all kinds of other things? So I thought, let's light up. In fact, I was talking to Cindy recently off the air, and we're thinking, we should have like a racing report. You know, we can include everything. You know, frogs in Calaveras County, you know, the Tour de France. We can do Le Mans. You know, we can do camel races of Bedouins. I don't really care. I just want to have fun because I am so sick of all the problems, you know. You look at what's going on in the world, and especially from the Democrats, any fascist, socialist, communist, any kind of totalitarian dictatorship, they want you poor, miserable, dependent, and what they want from you basically is your work, your taxes, and then death. You know, once you're no use to the state anymore, once you can't work anymore, well, you might as well just, you know, leave and make room for somebody else to pay taxes. So that's the world we live in, and quite frankly, I'm sick of it. So let's give our new folks a round of applause. And let's bring on Cindy Ann Scott. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning. How are you?
Can't you tell?
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you just fine. Yeah, you're on. Trust me,
good.
You're on the radio.
Good.
And Matt, good morning, Matt.
Good morning.
There we go. See, it's nice to have you both on because, you know, then you can hear each other. So we have a little verification. Well, occasionally we have problems. Yesterday I had a problem with my Wi-Fi. We had a thunderstorm going off overhead. And although my computer is connected by Ethernet by a cable, so the studio keeps going pretty much no matter what, but occasionally my microphone connection, for some reason, that's using Wi-Fi. And so that'll have problems. So there are times when you can't hear each other. Yesterday, I had to call into my own show. So, you know, we're not perfect yet, but we do have this amazing technology where you guys can call me, you know, and I broadcast. We're literally broadcasting worldwide. We've been heard in up to 70 countries. So don't let that intimidate you. It's just us, okay? Anyway, so I've never talked to Cindy. I've never talked to Matt. So this is our first chat, which is kind of fun because rehearsed conversations don't work as well. But we've been doing a lot of typing back and forth, messaging back and forth, and so we got a political aspect to this. We've got other things as well. But I just thought it was I've never talked to a drag racer. I know somebody that built drag racers. In fact, a friend of mine, Joey Martin here in Milton, Florida, used to build drag racers, and he has this little trike, this flying craft that looks like a hang glider with a little, like a golf cart hanging below it. It's really kind of fun. I've been up in that, but that's the extent of my knowledge. Yeah. Anyway, I've got a little bit of background noise from one of you, so if you're still making coffee, then we can hear it. So you want to just...
My husband's driving to work.
Oh, okay. So you guys are in motion. Okay. Well,
in the morning we get the kids ready and take them to school and all that.
Okay. So I don't know how much time you do have, so let's get right to it then. Cindy, tell me your story. How did you get into drag racing? What do you do? And what do you do the whole thing? Go for it. Just feel free. Let us know.
So back in the 90s, I actually used to race out at Orlando Speed World, an 85 IROC Camaro that had a kit of nitrous on it. And, you know, that was a lot of fun. That was, you know, in the 90s. Back then it was just, you know, whoever crossed the line first. But it has evolved so much over the years. And, you know, I always wanted a Charger. And I always wanted to get back in racing. And so my husband, for my birthday in 2020, got me my dream car. And
what
2019 Dodge Charger.
Oh, let's give a round of applause for that. Wait a minute. Hang on here. Let's give him a round of applause. Nice job.
Yes. And so, it was the super track pack, meaning, you know, it's built for tuning and traction and stuff like that. So in the beginning, you know, we were doing car shows and stuff like that. Well, we ended up as last year, the Hemi Horsepower Wars came to Orlando Speed World, and we went out there. It was the Diablo event and then the Leg Maker intake event. And so we went out there and did that, and that was the first time actually running the car down the track with no modifications, and I brought home second place in my class for that event. Thank you. And so that was with no modifications, just our daily driver. It's like one of those cars you go and you take the kids to school and pick up the groceries, go run the track.
Oh, by the way, let's get the groceries. And by the way, on the weekend, we're drag racing. Okay, fine.
Over the last year, I just want to jump in for a second
because that raises a really interesting question. Because I see a lot of people. Well, not a lot, but you know, every once in a while you see a Lamborghini, and it's a $250,000 car, and I'm thinking this thing does over 200 miles an hour. But where can you do 200 miles an hour? You know, I see very expensive cars that are tricked out. You've got brand new Corvettes. You've got extra horsepower, special Ram Air inducted, whatever they do. You know, for the Chargers, Camaros, Mustangs, things like that. I think you really can't run these anywhere. I thought, what's the point of a car that can get from 0 to 70 in 3 seconds to my 6 to 8 seconds? Once you're at 70, you're already at the speed limit. What's the point? So. That's what I want to talk about is, you know, places where people can actually run their cars the way they're meant to be run. Yeah, go ahead.
At the track.
So, yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of people that do street racing, and that can get very dangerous also because they don't have anywhere to run their cars. So they do, you know, illegal street racing. But at the track, you know, there's Friday Night Frenzy. Wednesday is Whoop-Ass Wednesday. And then they have Sunday fun days where you can go to the track and run your car. They have streetcar days where you have to race what you drive in. Like, you can't trailer it. You have to race what you drove in. And so there are, you know, at the track, if you have a pro mod car, some of these cars are doing an eighth of a mile at 200 miles an hour. But also building up, you know, like 3,000 to 4,000 horsepower. In an eighth of a mile. When you watch TV and you watch like the Memphis Street Outlaws or Oklahoma Street Outlaws, those are the people that are running, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 horsepower, and they're getting the 200 miles per hour in an eighth of a mile. So we do a quarter mile track, and we get up to like 125, 130 miles an hour in a quarter mile. Well, now we've just added, so our the season's about to start again in March. And so over the break, we have upgraded the car and added nitrous to it. And so once that is complete, our car should be really going fast. But a lot of those cars that you mentioned, like Lamborghinis and stuff, those are European-made cars, which they have the Autobahn. They don't have a speed limit over there. So I'm sure they're racing them up and down that Autobahn. Oh, I don't know.
Okay. Well, let's get – I want to continue with your story in just a bit. I want to get Matt in here, too, because you mentioned at the track. So how does someone take, you know, a regular car and get it out there, and what kind of tracks are available to drivers? Is it like a guide, you know, so I could tell, you know, a friend of mine, say, hey, you know, why don't you get this thing on a track and do something with it? How does that work, Matt?
No, it's just a quarter-mile track at Orlando. You go out there and you run on your own. You get everyday Joe Schmoes out there that go run, and they take their Mustangs and their Civics and just all their cars and go run to have fun. I mean, it's not something that's a guided, you know, a thing on the track. That's something when you get to like an oval course or a course like that where they do that. But as far as the drag strip, you just go out and run and hope for the best.
I think you feel more comfortable with your fellow professional drivers as opposed to, you know, weekend warrior drivers. Would that be right?
Well, that's true, but there's a problem too at Orlando Speed World where you have a lot of people who know what you're doing, but then you have a lot of people that come out there with cars that are fast that don't know how to drive them, and it turns into a problem.
Well, let's talk about
the other thing you have to worry about.
which raises an interesting question. You know, for those of us that have not done it, except, you know, occasional things back in our college days, we won't talk about it anymore. But, you know, going fast in a car, you think you're going straight. It's only a quarter mile. What's the big deal? You know, what does it take to drive a quarter mile, Cindy?
It takes a lot more than you think.
That's why I asked.
To actually drive exactly, a quarter mile yeah. and go straight, the tires off, not blow your engine. In fact, my race last year that I got the second place, there was a lady in my class. She was driving a Challenger that had been pro-modded, and she ended up knocking the tires off and ended over in my lane in front of me.
Ooh.
And
wow.
So I had to let out of it and wait for her and go around her. So the thing is that when you're building so much horsepower, you know, when you come up to the light, you turn the first beam on and you start spooling up and pulling that horsepower up. So as soon as the light goes green, you know, you've got to be ready. And so you're unleashing, you know, all this horsepower at one time. You've got to have your differentials correct. You have to have your timing correct. You have to have the tuning correct. You've got to have the right tires that will hook and grab so they won't knock off and, you know, smoke and go all over the place and stuff like that. So it's more than just getting in your car and hitting the gas pedal at the green light. It is a whole stage of getting your car to be able to handle that. And that's what my husband and our friends do with our car is they're getting it
yeah, he's
to
next.
Be able
I want
to
find
handle
out about that.
All that
yeah.
extra.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So would I be right in assuming that the greatest stress on a drag racer or any race car is the start, you know, from woe to go, from that instant where it's all horsepower, there's no kinetic energy, it's all potential, you're all ready to go, so you have the maximum horsepower develops, but you're not going anywhere yet. And just that instant, you know, where everything all of a sudden has to take off. Now, I know a little bit about engines and stuff. I used to be a flight instructor, and I hope to teach flying again. But we talk about the physics of flying all the time, you know, and the torque. You know, the propeller, when you're not moving, it's going to pull you off. You know, it spins to the right, you know, it spins clockwise, so it's going to spin you. It's going to send your nose counterclockwise. There's an equal opposite reaction other direction. And so all these different forces, I think torque, you know, is going to twist you guys. So all this stuff is just screaming 3,000 horsepower, but you ain't going anywhere yet. So I imagine that initial release is with the greatest stress on the car. Would that be a fair assumption?
It is. And so all that, our car is a rear wheel drive. And so all that horsepower and all that torque is going towards the back. And so again, you know, you've got to have the right chassis, the right differentials, the right everything and tune right to get those tires to take all that torque and horsepower and grab onto the road and to the track and take off. There is what we call a reaction time, and what that is how fast we take off once the light turns. So our brain takes, you know, like a half a second for our brain to tell our foot to get off the brake. And so when you're doing a three yellow light and then a green, on that third yellow, I let go because by the time my brain has told my foot to let go, it's green. So it's very intricate on timing. So, and you've got to be able to do that plus all the launch controls and everything at the same time too.
Yeah. Let's get meta in this too. Yeah, Matt.
The cars these days are not like they used to be back in the day when it comes to those cars. Everything runs off a computer in that car.
Oh, really?
You tell the car what to do, and it'll pretty much do it.
Okay.
It runs off launch control on the line. So literally all she does is we set the RPMs to what she wants to launch at. She clicks a button, and within a certain amount of time, computer tells the car what to do, and all she has to pretty much do is just hit the gas.
Wait. Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to back up for a second. We've taken a giant leap in technology, and I think I missed something along the way here. I mean, the last thing I ever thought of was computers in the drag race. But I guess there are. I mean, it makes sense. Everything else is computerized. So take me, Matt, the evolution of engines. Let's go back a ways before computers. So, yeah, and in fact, I had a question for Cindy, you know, whether you can put one foot, can you put your left foot on the brake and your right foot on the accelerator and just kind of release them both at the same time?
Yes.
I don't know if you can do that. You can. Okay,
I do
all
that.
Right.
That's
okay,
what I
so
do.
There you,
Because I don't have a trans brake in the car yet.
What's that?
A trans brake is a button that basically you can hold it and it'll hold your car like a brake. And then it'll let you use your right foot to, you know, floor the gas pedal. And then once that light turns green, you just let go of the button and the car will launch. But since I don't have a trans brake, I have to foot pedal. So I have my left foot on the brake, and by the time I hit the beam to acknowledge that I'm ready, as soon as I hit that first yellow, I put my right foot all the way to the floor on the gas pedal. So
you're standing
once
on both.
It's green or I'm ready, I do, yes.
Right.
So
yeah,
I just I lift my left foot off the brake when it's ready.
Interesting. Okay, Matt.
And then the car just goes.
You know, this is fascinating to me. Like I say, I love speed. I just haven't tried it yet, so I'm gonna find out. There's another question: how can us folks, you know, get a ride to Dragster? This would be kind of cool. So Matt, take me engine wise, where from before computers to after computers, what was the state of engines and the state of drag racing before computers? How did you build a car up, and then what did computers do for you? So let's hear that story.
Well, I mean you built cars all this. You built them different. I mean, they're obviously built the same way, but you built
right.
The tuning and everything was built different to run off, you know, just like say for nitrous, you know, back in the day, they ran nitrous. It was a dry kit, which it ran right into the intake and blew right into the motor. Well, that's how you blow a lot of motors up. These days they run wet kits, which is what she has on her car. And it allows the nitrous to go where it needs to go when it does. Instead of just all going right to the motor, it goes in stages instead of just all blowing right in.
What's nitrous? For
what's that?
I'm gonna ask you explain a lot of things for us neophytes out here. I mean, we've heard the term nitrous, but I don't think people exactly know what it is. This is nitrous oxide we're talking about, right?
Correct. Yeah.
What is that? What is it? What does it do?
Right.
What does it do for your engine?
It's spraying through the intake, which goes through the manifold and
right.
opens up more air and pressure into the motor, which is what it wants. So it's blowing that nitrogen.
And it gives it more horsepower.
Through the intake. And
right.
that's what gives you the horsepower, the extra, you know, on top of what you already have.
So why not run nitrous all the time?
It's the cheapest way and the easiest way.
It can blow your motor.
To go fast. Because
it's
a lot of people
shot.
Rather
hold on, guys. Let's just one at a time. So we're going to go Matt, Cindy. We're going to alternate here. That way we can get you. So Matt, and then we'll get to blowing the engine. So, Matt, you were saying something about the how this stuff works. I'm just curious, scientifically. I'm just, you know, what it does and why you can't run
it all
the time. Why can't you use
it? That's what it does.
Can you run pure nitrous? I mean, why not replace gasoline with nitrous? Or is it not a viable fuel by itself?
No, it has to run off its own thing. The fuel and the nitrous are two separate things.
Okay.
The fuel runs through the fuel line. This the nitrous does hook up to a fuel line, which it does go through your fuel, but it's not 100% what runs the car.
Okay.
You still have fuel mixed with your nitrous.
Okay, makes sense.
If that makes sense.
Cindy, you were saying, okay. Yeah, Cindy, you want to say, I'm going to bounce back and forth here. So we're trying to coordinate. You know, you guys are both so enthusiastic.
That,
Yeah. Uh-huh. Go ahead.
I was just saying that, like, our nitrous bottle is 150 shots. So basically I just push a button and it gives me a quick boost is all it does. And so it gives me that boost coming off the start.
Because I've seen the movies, right? They do the nitrous, you know, partway through the race, you know, and they,
it's
if you
not
do, I remember. Of course not. That's what I'm asking. So how does it really work? So you really use it in the beginning of the race. You don't do it partway through. And I remember watching, I forgot maybe it was one of the Fast and Furious things. Somebody was racing. Someone hit their nitrous too early, and then they went fast and they slowed down. The other one who did it later sped up and passed them kind of thing. So nitrous, you want it right at the beginning. That's what you're saying?
So
no.
No. We want it when I'm in a high – you hit it when you're in your high horsepower, so RPM, excuse me. So the more RPMs you have, the more horsepower you're pulling. So when I don't want it right off the line, so probably when I kick into a second or high gear, that's when I hit the button and that'll launch me. I never want to do it right off the line because that you can blow your motor, number one, and number two, you're going to run out of it before you get to the big end. And we call the finish line the big end. And that's, you know, where most of, where you want that. Some cars, when you do see them driving and then they hit it, they have a scramble button. So some of those cars will have extra kits of nitrous. They'll have two or three kits. We only have one kit. So they have a scramble button. So if they've already used their first kit, they can go to their scramble button and hit their second kit for the final finish.
So that would be unfair if one car has one pack and another one has like two or three packs. You have to race equal numbers.
No, it's racing.
Of nitrous, right? Oh.
Nope.
Okay.
It's bracket racing. You don't have to race another nitrous car. You could race a turbo car. You could race a supercharged car.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. It's bracket racing. It's all about times.
Bracket. What's bracket mean?
So bracket is.
You at least get a turn. Don't worry. No, you guys. This is why I love this. You guys are great, by the way. This is fun. So we got time. You can take turns. You know, this is typical action radio. Everybody wants to talk all the time. Yeah, go ahead. So who's first? Mm-hmm. Cindy or Matt? One of you. You guys decide.
You can explain it.
Okay.
You explain it.
Well, bracket.
You guys are great. Go ahead. Cindy?
Bracket timing is the time that you're running quarter miles. So the first bracket usually starts at 12.5 seconds, and then it goes down to 12 seconds, then 11.5, then 11, 10, and so forth. So whatever your car usually runs, so if you have a 12.5 car, that's the bracket that you're going to go into. If you can get your car to run the quarter mile in 12 seconds, then you want to go in that bracket. That's where all the cars are in that bracket. So it doesn't matter what's on the car. If they cross that line and they're running, say they're in the 12-second bracket, but they ran 12.5, they're disqualified, even if they won, because they overran their dialed-in time. And that's how I got second place instead of first. I actually crossed the line first, but I ran faster than my dialed-in time. So I was disqualified for that. So I got second place.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so you think it would just be whoever crosses the line first, but it's not that simple. You have to qualify.
Mm-mm.
So if you run faster in the race than you qualified, they think that's cheating somehow? I think that would be a disadvantage.
Not cheating, but you have so when you go out there for a bracket race, you get two test runs to get your dialed-in time, and you put that dialed-in time on your window, and the tower notes it, and you have to run in within that time. You cannot run faster than that time. You can run slower than that time, but you cannot run faster than that time. So
and that's to match cars equally.
As I said in the beginning,
And
so in the beginning of this, I said, you know, back then it was just all about who crossed the line first. Well, I crossed the line first, but I ran faster than my time, so I got second instead of first.
Yeah, what if you just run better? What if you just have a better run? What if your reflexes were half a second faster or something? You know,
and
all the intangibles, the wind changes. I mean, you know, the variables, you know, the track dries a little more. I mean, any number of things could happen, you know.
That's
one thing we learned flying, the variables. Okay, Matt?
That's what happened with her during that Diablo event last year. Everybody told me, put the time higher, and I knew what we knew what we were doing because we wanted a chance to win. So why not?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Put a higher time and just don't outrun it. She knows if she gets to the 330 or 400, if she's gonna go too fast, let off a little bit and then get back in it. Well, her foot doesn't come off the gas, so that's what happened. But everybody plays the game. Everybody knows what they're doing. Somebody has a 9-second car; they're gonna put 12s on it. She ran a girl that had a 9-second car in her first run, and she beat her.
Mm-hmm.
And she was running in a rookie class because she had too much power and couldn't control the car.
Oh, so that person lost because they had too much power? How does that work?
She couldn't control the car. She jumped into my lane.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. So cars do like airplanes. Do they pull either left or right depending on which way the engine's turning if you have too much power? Which way does your car pull? Or is that a trade secret?
It's whatever the track is. Whatever the whatever the track's doing. Plus, you got to think, these cars have traction control too. And a lot of people turn the traction control off.
Okay.
We don't turn the traction control off on that car just so that it'll stay as straight as possible. It takes
away
some time.
So that's what traction control does. Okay.
Correct. But it'll at least keep the car straight and not going all over the track. Because when you got all these big cars, like these NHRA cars and even the, you know, the Pro Mod cars that are running, you know, eights and sevens, they don't have traction control. That's why when you see them start getting sideways, half the time, if they don't control it, they're in the wall. They don't have traction control to help them control it.
Does that slow you down a couple of seconds?
It does, but it's better that than her crashing into the wall or somebody else.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm just saying that, but I'm curious as to why somebody would not do it.
So
they're actually sacrificing safety by not having the traction control.
I'd rather her be safe and use traction control than turn it off and have a chance of her crashing.
Well, you're racing other drivers using traction control, so you're still competing on an equal basis then.
A lot of them don't use it, though.
Oh, okay.
Lot of them, you can turn, again, those computers in those cars. It's as simple as pushing buttons on the screen or even just hooking the computer up to it.
On the screen?
And doing whatever you want to change.
You've got like a touch screen in your car?
Yeah. Cindy will have to send you some pictures. Everything's ran digital off a touch screen.
Oh, that's hysterical. I had no idea. You know, I'm still thinking, you know, the smell of gasoline, you put on the gloves and the fire suit and you hop in through the window and strap yourself in. And it's just, you know, I don't even know if you have a gear shift. You know, are these things automatic or do you have stick shifts?
It's an 8-speed automatic. You can paddle shift, but.
Yeah, I was thinking. Okay, so.
When you paddle shift, you're actually taking time off. It can actually. So, you know, it can be a manual or automatic, but when you use manual, like if you talk to a lot of racers, they're going to tell you that they don't like to use a manual transmission because taking the time to shift will pull the car back and you can lose like, you know, a tenth of a second or so in that shift.
In that shifting time. Yeah, that makes sense. No, I would think they would all be automatic at this point. Yeah. Matt?
I'm going to have to interrupt you guys real fast. I just got to my wife's brother's house, so I'm going to have to cut it short. You guys can continue, but unfortunately, I'm going to have to go.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, it's good to have you on. Let's see if we're going to talk about doing this regularly because this is fun. And so if this time works for you, Wednesday mornings, we could do 6:30 here, you know, Central Time. So you're probably 7:30 where you guys are. But we'll talk off the air. But if this works, I mean, I want to do this every week because this is fun. I mean, every race on the planet, we're going to cover.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Yeah,
well,
go ahead and say thanks for having us. We definitely want to talk about, you know, doing it every week, all your listeners. And I'm going to go ahead and say from one person that I admire, good old, if you ain't first, you're last, Ricky Bobby. See you guys later.
Go. Thanks, Matt. Matt Scott, there we go. Welcome both of you to Action Radio. This is wonderful. I kind of had a feeling. I mean, sometimes I just know, you know, that something's going to work out. And now, do you have some more time, Cindy, or do you have to go soon, too?
No, I'm okay. I'm good.
All right. Yeah, but definitely the two of you. You're great together. It makes for a fast. I didn't believe it's like half an hour already, and I've barely touched my questions.
Yeah.
So let's have some fun here. Let's kind of walk through the 12 or 12.5 seconds of a race because that does not sound like a long time. And then I'll ask you why you guys don't take over an airport runway and do a mile race. But let's talk about a quarter mile. So what happens? You know, from what you're at the gate, you're at the start. You know, what do you have to do to actually run a drag race? If you can kind of walk us through the 12 second, what are you doing at the 2 second, 4 second? You know, I'm just, because you got to be moving fast. These things are happening really quickly. How do you do a race?
Correct. So that gets back to the computer. So the main thing, like what my husband does and our team and stuff is they tune the car. So that's where the laptops come in. They plug the laptops into the computer in the car, and that's where they can, you know, adjust the timing, the differentials, you know, the traction, all that stuff. I rely very heavily on them doing what they need to do to the car. I just get in it. I get in the car, I stage. My husband, who is my crew chief, he will bring me up into the burnout box, and
that
is we take the track team will put water down on the ground and we run the back tires. I'll go around it and then back up into it so I get water on my back tires, and then I'll do a burnout. And what that's doing is heating my tires up and laying down rubber so that I can grab
the tires. So you can only do this. You can only race tires so many times then on a, in a race, right? How many times can you get a? How many races can you get out of a set of tires, especially back tires?
It depends on how much of a how often you're racing. A good set of Mickey Thompson, you know, drag racing tires will last you a good while. Isn't a pro mod car, so we get more. You know, we're not running, you know, that much horsepower, so we can get a lot of use out of drag radials on the back. When I ran the race last year, it was on my regular street tires. So we just take the pressure out so that there's less air pressure in them so that they can grab the – so when other cars are going down the track, they're laying rubber as well. And we rely on their rubber tracks for our tires to line up in the grooves and grab also.
So you're actually leaving rubber on the track all the way, not just in the burnout box, but you're actually, you know, part of your tires, you're leaving a little bit of rubber all the way down the track.
Pretty much for the first 60 foot, yes.
Oh, 60 feet,
That's the important part.
That's the grab area?
Correct. And if you're just a little bit off, when you are, so when I go through the I back up, get my tires wet, I do a burnout, lay the rubber down, heat up my tires.
Okay.
I get up to the line. He will stage me right up to the line so I can bump in and turn on the other light, meaning I'm ready. I start spooling up, getting the horsepower, the RPMs up. And then it depends. So the tree, which is the lights. There's a pro tree, and then there's just the regular tree, a dig. Mm-hmm. They call it a dig. And the pro tree just goes from, you know, when you've lit the bulb up to
– what's that?
All of a sudden it's green. So
the bulb is
so
the first light in the tree?
So there's like on the Orlando Speed World, their tree, the first bulb, when you hit the first beam, it'll do a half moon. And then once you're – and that's then I bump up and it'll finish the half moon, so it'll finish a full circle. That means I am staged and ready to go. And then once the car next to me that I'm racing has done the same thing, as soon as I see their bulb in a full circle, that's when I start spooling my motor up because it's going to go from that to an instant green. So I have to be ready unless it's a three yellow. So then you'll have the light at the top where it's the full circle, then you'll have three yellow lights that go quickly and then green. So usually by the second yellow, I'm hitting it. And by the third yellow, I'm taking my foot off the gas. And I'm guessing the tree is what it's called.
Okay.
So that gives me a better reaction time and I get a jump on the 60 foot from the car next to me. If I can out 60 foot the car next to me, I can win the race.
So
reaction
that
60
feet takes... from the time the car actually starts moving, that 60 feet is a bare fraction of a second, right? How long does it take you to do that? Quarter second, half a second, a full second maybe? I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, you don't have to know.
It can
it's
take
probably...
anywhere about – it's giving away my time.
Okay, don't do it. No,
anywhere
no.
Anywhere from
sorry.
1 to 2 seconds.
Let's put the disclaimer on right now. Don't give away any trade secrets. Don't give away anything that you know, I don't want to do it. That's okay. No, in fact, I'm glad you mentioned that. Okay. So talk to Matt about this too. Do not give away trade secrets. Do not give away things that, you know, because I'm nosy. I mean, I don't know what not to ask because I don't know what I'm not supposed to know. Okay. So don't worry. You never have to worry about saying to me, I can't tell you that. You know, and that's perfectly fine. Okay, that you don't have to answer that. You know, this is an inquisition. This is fun. So I don't want to know things I'm not supposed to know.
So just
you know, say look, just so that's a proprietary secret, or I can't tell you. Don't even give that a thought if that's the situation. Okay, so let me put let's just put it this way: the first 60 feet is critical. You actually and you can decide a race in the first 60 feet. So a quarter mile.
There's a lot of times though. So. My car, it really goes, you know, we're trying to get it launch better. I do have really good, my reaction time is a 0.01 second.
Okay.
And So I have a really good reaction time because I guess the tree. But and that just comes with practice.
Yeah.
But my car really starts building horsepower when it's in motion and when the RPMs go up. So I usually, if a car jumps out on me, 9 times out of 10, I can go around them unless it's just, you know, a souped up pro mod car. I mean, there's cars that I cannot meet. But again, racing has changed. And so it is more of not so much of who's faster, but who's smarter.
See, that's interesting. Okay, so that's a great equalizer. So if you haven't spent a lifetime, you know, dodging cops and, you know, running rum, which, you know, back in the Prohibition days, I mean, that's how NASCAR got started. You know, they were rum runners. They were you know, so these people were driving from like 12 years old, you know, whatever it was. Yeah,
right.
That's a different kind of thing. So,
right.
So when you say race smarter as opposed to what, you know, so as opposed to what was the other, so it's not just horsepower anymore. It's the, but you're talking about 12 seconds. That's not a long time to be smarter. This is what I find so fascinating.
So when I say that, it is about horsepower. It's always about horsepower.
It
it's always going to
be
about horsepower. But it's also about the smarter, running smarter with your tune. There's so many different tunes to put into an engine. So running smarter, making sure that everything is, you know, tuned to do what you want the car to do. If you put too high of a tune in it, you're going to knock the tires off. You could, you know, smoke the tires the whole way. If you turn the car down too much and it, you know, you, let's say you look at this car and you think that you're racing and you're like, oh, I don't need a high tune for this car. I got this. And if you turn it down too much, that car might blow you away because you turned the car down too much.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all in the tune. And then once you're out there, I mean, like Matt said, I just hit the pedal to the floor and keep the wheel straight. Like that's pretty much my job. But now with the nitrous, it's going to be, I hit the pedal to the floor, I get going, I get out of that 60 foot and I hit that, that button for the nitrous. So,
I'm curious, where are you developing full power in the race? So you got a 12-second race. So if I remember my math, what is it? 5,280 feet is a mile. So 2,250 is like a half mile. So like it's a little over 1,000 feet we're talking about for a quarter mile, right? Or have you measured it? I'm trying to break
it
down.
It's about 1,250.
Okay, that's, all right. So all right, that's good. So yeah, you got better numbers than me. Good, thank you. So you got 1,250 feet. So at what point in your 60 feet, if you're deciding a race in 60 feet, you've got, you know, like, you know, 1,190 feet left to go, you know? So I'm thinking to myself, that's still most of the race. So if most races is over in the beginning, where are you developing full power? At what point in either in time, in 12 seconds or in your feet? And like I say, you don't have to be specific, exact if you don't want to, but I'm just curious, where are cars, is it like the first 200 feet they're going at full power? Is it, where are they really, you know, doing what they're doing?
So a quarter mile is actually 1,320 feet, and I was wrong. So it's 1,320. My car will get full power when it's at the higher RPM. So usually when I've hit high gear, the more RPMs, the more horsepower you're pulling. So usually, you know, I mean, I have a really quick launch because I use launch control. Which what it does is I, you know, my husband sets the RPMs to rev to that, and then my car will launch once it hits that. And it gives me a little quick out of the hole burst and boost. And but then probably once I'm at an eighth mile, as my car is rolling and I'm, you know, going through the gears and it's developing more horsepower as the RPMs are going up. So the higher you run your RPM, the more you're going to use your horse differently when you got it. And I know that sounds off because usually when you, you know, if you have a manual, once you hit 3,000 RPMs, you're shifting. But I try to get the car, you know, and that's part of the tuning also is not shifting the gears until you've reached a 4,000 or 5,000 RPMs. Because that's where you're maximizing your full potential of horsepower.
Okay, that's what I was curious about. And if it's not a trade secret, can you tell me like how high your RPMs get? Or, you know, 4,000 to 5,000 is where most people are shifting? Or the automatic shift is going on?
Yeah, it just depends on the car and the tune and what it can handle. So it's just really, you know, the car, it's the tune. I mean, like I said, everything's different now with the computers being involved with racing and tuning to get the max out of your car. So whatever you set in the tuning, whatever you set it at, you can tell the car when to shift gears. So if you want it at the max amount for horsepower, you know, you're going to set it at the highest, to shift at the highest RPM level.
Without blowing your engine. So you've always got that. You're on the edge of...
That also involves, you know, making sure you've got the right, like, so with nitrous, adding nitrous, you know, it's not just so much we put the nitrous in and we cook it up. We have to change out the spark plugs and this and this and this so it can handle the nitrous in our motor. So we don't blow it. So there's so much more to it than, you know, there's so much more behind the scenes than the cars just going down the track straight.
Well, I know this is why I wanted to have you on, because I find this fascinating. This is something I don't know a whole lot about. You know, I've watched races. I mean, I just see the cars going around the track and thinking, okay, well, this is interesting, you know, but until you get into it, you know, it's like if, you know, I tell people, you know, I used to teach flying, and people go, oh, that's nice. You know, you go up in your airplane, you fly around, come down again. No, there's a little bit more to it than that. You know, so in the same respect,
right,
you know, this is why I want to find out, because I know there's more to it. That's why I'm curious about this. So did you drive before computers or no? I'm curious.
Yes. When I did it in the 90s, it was like 98. We didn't have the computers. There was handheld tuners, and then it was just basically knowing what to do to the engine at that time, you know, to make it, to give it, you know, what spark plugs to use, what, you know, manifold to use, what cams to use.
Yeah, you're guessing
pretty
with
much,
your accelerator,
yeah,
how, much, how much the car can take. Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
But now you've got a computer that tells you.
So it looks like the science has kind of taken over this in the engineering. So a lot of the race is really decided, you know, before you get to the track is what it sounds like. You know, and it's not just
there's still driver errors. Driver errors.
Uh-huh.
So, and you never know and what the other person's got going on. You know, they may look like they have just, you know, a regular daily driver. And, you know, I do most of my races with other Dodge and Chrysler cars. So, like, a lot of Challengers and Hellcats and Red Eyes and stuff like that. And so, you know, if you put my car up next to a Red Eye, I should not win. I should not beat that car. Mm-hmm. But with the added nitrous, I should run the same amount of horsepower as a Hellcat. You know, if I'm smart on it, I should. So you can never count out what kind of car you're lined up next to. So it's always going to come down to the driver and, you know, their reaction time, their 60 foot, you know, if they're hooking their tires and stuff like that. So you can have all the science and stuff like that. That doesn't mean you're going to, you know, think, oh, well, we've got this. This is what we're running. We're going to win this. You never know what the person next to you's got.
Interesting. Well, obviously Matt had a really short work day because he's back. Did you enjoy your day of work, Matt? Did you get a lot accomplished?
I did. Hey, that's why her brother's awesome. Now I got a long drive, so I figured maybe I'd catch you guys before it was done.
Well, I'm glad you called back. No, this is great. So which actually this is really good because I wanted to ask, you know, the difference between a driver and a mechanic. So Cindy, what makes you a driver? Why did you pick driving over being a mechanic? What have you always wanted to do this? And then that'll be your turn. So what makes a driver versus a mechanic? Who goes into which one? Why? What got you into this?
I grew up with older brothers, and I grew up with older brothers on a farm, and we were always out on. They always had me out on their motorcycles, the dune buggies and stuff like that. So I was always, you know, out. It's just how I grew up, and always watching. You know, they're always on NASCAR, always doing racing, stuff like that. So it was, you know, growing up with brothers. I think did that a lot, and my dad, who was into it. I mean, my dad taught me a lot about engines and stuff like that. But I just enjoyed the adrenaline rush of going down the track at full speed. And so that's what I like to do, is just have that. It's just a rush to be in that car as it takes off down the road. And
Oh, yeah. I can only imagine.
That's why I like to be the driver.
But did you exhibit driving skills at an early age? Were you better at a dune buggy?
Yes.
Did you anticipate things? Okay, so that's what I'm curious about. What makes you a driver as opposed to a mechanic?
What makes me a driver? I've been driving since my oldest brother taught me to drive in his RX-7 when I was 14. My dad, you know, taught me to drive. I was driving tractors with them. I was driving dune buggies with them at an early age. So I learned at a very early age driving skills. They also taught me, you know, offensive and defensive driving. So I've been driving since, I mean, I could touch the pedals.
Yeah.
Have you always had
faster reaction times? Have you been able to see and perceive traffic patterns faster? I'm just curious because I know I'm a good pilot, you know, and I'm trying to relate this to drag racing. What is it, in the weeds questions. I don't know, you know, if folks are listening, if you're bored, call me. He's like, Greg, stop it. You know, but I'm just curious what makes a driver? What do you have that other people wouldn't have that wouldn't make them as good a driver? That's what I'm curious about. You may not know.
Is it driving in general, or just
can you see traffic patterns?
I do have a very fast reaction.
Okay.
Yeah, I do
can
have a very
visualize?
Fast reaction. You can ask my husband.
Yeah.
I do. And that's where the offensive and defensive driving comes in. So, like, when that girl jumped my lane, I was already, you know, prepared. Because when you've got a car that has a hot tune in it and she's telling me she's driving 9 seconds and a quarter mile, my eye is watching her because she's going to knock the tires or she could potentially put it into the wall, which she almost did. And so I become a defensive driver at that point. And so I'm going to always watch. And when we're staging, waiting for our turn to race, our engines are up so we can cool the engines down. And so we can see who we're lined up to, what kind of engine they've got, and stuff like that. So I know, do I need to be on the offense or the defense? I kind of get an idea of where I'm at. I do have, you know, I have peripheral, you know, I use my peripheral vision, and that's also how I'm able to use offensive and defensive. So I can see the track, but I can also see onto the side what the car next to me is doing. I scare the crap out of my husband, though, with my
Matt, your turn's coming up.
That.
why do you scare him? What's scary?
Ask him.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. So, but the reason I'm asking is because, like, you know, what I remember from flight instruction, the best pilots were not the ones that could focus like a laser on one thing. In fact, they're the least qualified pilots. You know, a lot of times the very high-tech, you know, engineer, lawyer types, doctors. They're really good at focusing on one thing, which is really great when you're doing surgery, but it's useless in an airplane because the people that can visualize where the airplanes are in a pattern, the people that can perceive their speed and height and trend changes better are going to make better pilots. So this is what I probably should let you know this ahead of time, but that's what I was getting to, things like reaction time, peripheral vision, ability to see patterns, to see things in advance, the perception of we call it situational awareness. Okay, so that's what I'm looking for, and I was kind of expecting that the similar qualities of a pilot, although different, would relate to drag racing because you've got to have that same, I guess, situational awareness is probably the best term. So Matt, now it's your turn. What makes a mechanic? What makes you do what you do, and how did you get into it?
Don't call me a mechanic because that's beyond and far. I'm a redneck mechanic.
How would I address you? How would I address you correctly? How do I address you correctly?
I can do stuff. That's about it.
Okay. So how do you do what you do?
I just learn from buddies and learn obviously from YouTube. This whole racing and doing this kind of stuff, I grew up working on stuff, but never cars. You know, mud trucks and that kind of stuff. I was a fisherman, never into any of this stuff. I started doing this when she wanted to do it. So I had to learn and adapt to everything that I'm doing.
Okay. So, but were you one of these kids that had, you know, Lego sets and Lincoln Logs and, you know, the old Erector set thing? Did you build stuff as a kid? I mean, did you do puzzles? Did you fit things together? Were you always, did you take apart the refrigerator and put it back together? I mean, were you one of those kids or what? Uh-oh. Is he still there? Matt? Oh, Matt dropped. We lost Matt. Cindy, you still there? I kind of got nervous. I thought because every once in a while, Blog Talk will drop things. But there's no storm outside, so it shouldn't happen. So we lost Matt for some reason. But maybe you can kind of fill me in here then. So was he one of those kids? Did he build things as a kid? Does he have a natural inclination to taking things apart, putting them back together better? Because certain people are like really good at that. I'm not one of them, by the way. I don't take apart the refrigerator. You know, I call somebody. But does he have skills that, you know, that are unique to being able to do this? And I'm just curious what those would be.
So, yes, he does. And he has a very high potential for it. Don't let him fool you about saying he's not a mechanic. He knows what he's doing.
I know he does. That's why I asked him.
He is great.
I can tell that. Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to put your life into someone that doesn't know what they're doing. So, yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay. Yeah, and I fully trust him. I don't know about, you know, when he was a kid.
He's back.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know about a lot when he was a kid.
Call drop.
Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're just trying to figure out what the difference in skills between, you know, a YouTube mechanic, as you called yourself, although you still have to tell me how to address you properly, and a driver. You know, what makes somebody, I mean, you know, I know driver is similar to pilot, so I understand that. Mechanic stuff, and here's what I used to do as an instructor that was very unusual. I always took my students into the mechanics. We spent, especially on rainy days when we couldn't fly, except my instrument students, we loved rainy days. We always flew in the rain. And in a little airplane, that's an experience. You know, imagine doing a drag race when you can't see anything.
No, we don't do that. No.
Yeah, I know you don't, but I'm just saying. But that's what we.
I have a buddy from Emory Riddle that used to fly and used to try to get me on his little plane all the time, and I never would do it, ever.
See, that's interesting. You guys hop into drag races, and I'm thinking to myself, well, this would be kind of fun. See, I feel perfectly comfortable in an airplane.
Well,
thousands of feet
up.
He
doesn't hop into drag race.
You
do. I don't hop in anywhere.
Oh, you don't? Oh, you don't? That's interesting.
That's
consistent with the airplane mechanics on you. A lot of them did not fly. They loved working on engines. They loved airplanes. They loved everything about them except flying them. You know, and I'm just the opposite. I love flying them, but I don't want to take it apart. I mean, I've looked at what mechanics do. But just for the balance of knowledge, I used to take my students, you know, on bad weather days. They said, oh, we're going to cancel. I said, no, we're going to go visit the mechanics. Huh? Yeah, come on, let's go. Or we visit the tower. But I always had something to do with my students. So we go visit mechanics, and they had the inspection panels open, and they could see the cables. And when they realized what the airplanes looked like on the inside, how really fragile they were, it's kind of funny. I mean, that's all aluminum? Yeah, it's all aluminum. Yeah, there's some steel that holds your wing together. Oh, that's it? Yeah, that's it. You know, that's the engine? Yeah, that little thing? That's what's powered? Yeah, that's it. You know, it's got a big cowling, but a little engine. Mm-hmm. Okay, so anyway. But these things were, I thought they were critical for people to understand. So it's like, you know, the more ever understands about mechanics and the more a mechanic understands about driving, you know, the better you're going to work together. So this is why I had my students learn about, you know, airplane mechanics and engines, really not only how they work book knowledge to pass a test, but actually they could actually see the parts and see what they did. So, yeah. So back to my original question, Matt, have you always, like, you know, taken things apart, put them together? Are you one of those, you know, sort of engineer types?
Oh, yeah. I always. Since I was little, taking stuff together, always half the time could never put it back together. I was good at taking it apart.
Cindy?
But eventually
I figured it out. I did a lot with my grandfather, too. We built an old 57 Chevy back in the day that he had. So that was really what got me into it. And then, like I said, growing up, I did all the mud trucks and the ATVs and, you know, did all that. I raced at the track when I had gut still. I did that when I was younger, taking the street bike 170 miles an hour down the track. But
that's
when I didn't have any cares in the world.
But
now I've never been behind the wheel of that car down the track ever. Not once.
Huh. Do you want to?
No, I'm good.
I'm just curious.
I will pass. Yeah. I have enough worries every time watching her making sure she makes it to the end of the track and comes back. Mm-hmm. Then I worry about wanting to even get in the car.
Interesting. Yeah, and you guys work so well together. I can just imagine, you know, at the race, it must be kind of fun. But, yeah, so let's talk about the other half of the race. You know, we've covered how you get started and get up to full speed. How do you stop the damn thing? And when do you stop the damn thing? How does that all work?
Well, the track gives you enough room to slow down. A lot of cars have parachutes on the back, and so they can deploy the chute to slow them down.
Right.
I just am thankful that I have really good brakes. But you get another probably 500 feet after the finish line to slow down and then go down the tech road. And so you've got plenty of time. As soon as I hit the finish line, I roll down the windows, and that, you know, pulls air into the car, and that kind of slows the car down as well.
Wait a minute. How much does that slow down? I've always been told that, you know, you can lose like 10% of your gas mileage if you drive with the windows open. How much of a drag is that? Or does it have more effect over 100 miles an hour kind of thing, the windows?
By the time I've hit the gas, or, you know, I've let off the pedal and I start to slowly hit the gas, I'm already dropping my horsepower way down, and it's going into low gear. And so by rolling the windows down after I hit it, it's pulling the air in, which is pulling pressure, and it's pulling the car back.
Uh-huh.
So it's almost like, you know, we keep the windows up, of course, while we're racing.
Right.
But as soon as I hit the line, you'll see a lot of people. If you watch a lot of YouTube drag racers, you'll see them all putting their windows down as soon as they hit the line, if it's not a pro mod card. Pro mod cards, you can't roll your windows up or down. But if it's a regular, you know, car that can roll the windows up and down, you'll see most of them rolling their windows down as soon as they hit the finish line, and it helps slow the cars down. But we have plenty of
checklists
to...
Yeah. Huh, Matt? Yeah, go ahead.
So we have a buddy of mine, Chris. He owns a company. It's one of the biggest companies in the world called Legmaker Intakes. He makes intakes for cars for Dodges only. And he's pretty much the number one company in the world. He has the same car as her. It runs 8.7s in the quarter mile.
Wow.
At 159 miles an hour, 160 miles an hour. He would be a guy that one day during one of these shows you would want to talk to, because he could have a perspective that Cindy, him and them could talk and give you perspectives that are going to be night and day. Because her going one way and him going one way in these cars, because he has a chute on his car, he's got a roll cage. I mean, it's insane.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the difference in the cars. It's crazy.
Well, you guys are welcome to bring
on
guests. You know, now that we're becoming an instant thing here on Action Radio Wednesday morning, Wednesday fun day, you can bring on anything you want. You know, so if you have folks who want to do it, you can preview races, you can bring on race sponsors, you can, who knows, maybe somebody will want to sponsor my show. You know, for we'll talk about the freedom stuff that we do at some point too. But the idea is, yeah, but any expert, anybody, if you have somebody that makes, you know, the world's best racing widget, whatever that might be, bring them on. Because racing, you know, everybody, we all have an inherently competitive spirit, as much as the government schools want to, you know, breed it out of us. It's not going to happen. So we're at the top of the hour. So if you want to get political, we can do that. But, you know, because everything's political.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, yeah, I got some other questions too, like, you know, are they going to make you use electric engines one day or some kind of stupid thing like that? We'll get that in a second. But we all have this inherently competitive spirit. I love competition, but I compete mostly with myself. You know, what can I do better?
Mm-hmm.
I'm obviously, you know, the reason I do Action Radio is because I'm not an Olympic pole vaulter. You know, I'm not an athlete. I'm just not, you know. That's why I played music all through school, because I couldn't play sports. I suck at sports. I mean, I'm terrible, but I have a great time doing it. You know, I love tennis. I love fencing, you know, and so I do what I can do. But, you know, everybody – go ahead, Matt. Yeah.
Well, no, that's – sorry. I'll say that's where it comes into me for this part. Like, the whole car thing, like I said, I met my whole life pretty much. But I enjoy doing this because it makes her happy. But I really enjoy watching her go down the track. I spend every weekend working on that car, everything I can to do to that thing. That's what I spend my time doing. And we have a great time doing it. She doesn't do car shows, but I take it to car shows pretty much Friday, Saturday, and Sunday every weekend.
Okay.
you meet a lot of different people. You meet a lot of people with different builds. It's just the whole car world's new to us in the last 2 years, and it's crazy. It's a crazy world. That's for sure.
So it's a family. It's a group. It's like people who sail, people who hunt, people who do, you know, any particular sport. You know, pilots, especially glider pilots. You know, they're a whole fraternity right there. You know, so it's a group. It's you know, you've got something in common. Competitive shooters. We have you know, various folks that you know, we've talked about that on the show a bunch of times too. Donnie Chapman, you know, particularly who does competitive shooting, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, it's like, you know, another big family out there because you have this common interest, this common bond. And as much as, like I say, the dark forces in our society want to breed out competition. You know, we're all equal. We're all the same. No, we're not. You know, human excellence is what makes us great. So if you know, as we're making America great again, you know, let's make people great again. Try to do great things. Try to do beyond what anybody's done before. You know, this is gonna sound arrogant. You know, pat myself on the back time. But you know, no one's ever done Action Radio before. I'm proud of that. This is my idea. This is something I'm trying. You know, there's no guidance for this. There's no one that I can look to say, well, how do you do Action Radio? Because no one's ever done it. I love being a pioneer. So if you guys can think of something new, some new widget that you put on your race car, you'll find a new way to do time faster or a new aerodynamic device or something, you know, some new way of, you know, from carburetors to fuel injectors to whatever you guys come up with. I mean, that's the kind of thing that makes it great. Racing has always been, you know, for cars. I watched the thing where Ford beat, what was that movie? You know what I'm talking about. Was it Tom Cruise? What's the car movie where they beat Ferrari? Ford beat Ferrari back in the 60s or something like that. Remember that movie?
The only one I remember, he did the NASCAR movie. That's the only one I remember him being in.
Days of Thunder, that's different, yeah.
I can't.
But there was a film where Ford beat Ferrari. Nobody ever thought anybody would beat Ferrari. Ferrari was like the number one racing. And this maybe it was in the 40s, 50s, could have been even in the 30s. I'm not sure when the film was set. But the point being, racing has captured the imagination of people for forever because everybody wants, you know, a fast car. It's kind of fun. And nowadays, my big concern, in fact, I actually have, we do citizen legislation. So, Matt, I don't know if you're as familiar. I've talked to Cindy more. But what we do here is I have a citizen legislature. And so we write bills as solutions to the problems that we talk about on the show. I actually have a Creative Car Act. Okay. Creative Car Act gets the government way out of vehicles now because cars are boring. Cars are really dull. They all look the same. Nobody says, I want to drive a 2002, you know, Chevy Impala. Or 2000, you know, no one says that. I want to drive a Honda Accord. Yeah, man, that's a good. No. People want a 57 Chevy. They want a 61 Corvette. I want a 67 Firebird.
Yeah.
That's my car. Okay. And so I'm gonna have you guys help me find one. At some point, we're gonna work on that when the show gets a little bigger. But you know, people don't dream about, you know, 2022 model cars. They just don't. I mean, it's nice to have a new car, but they all look the same. They all have so many restrictions, so many aerodynamic restrictions, so many environmental restrictions. Now you've got car companies that want to ban gasoline cars entirely. I like hybrids. I think hybrids are a great idea. But the idea of having all electric cars, you know, well, it's environmental. No, it's not. Where do you think your electricity comes from, you idiots? It comes from electric power plants that are fueled by, you know, oil, gas, natural gas, you know, uranium and coal. That's where your power comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Morons. You know, Yeah, so if you want to react to any of that, but just in terms of competition, the spirit of competition, you know, like I say, I was competing against other instructors as a flight instructor, even though we didn't really talk about it, but I wanted my students to be better than their students, and they were. So competition is essential to our soul. I mean, it really is. You guys have both been competing all your lives, and it's good. It's fun. Any reaction? I'm just curious.
I competed totally different, you know. Racing and fishing are two different worlds in their own. I don't know if Cindy told you that, you know, but that's what I did. I traveled around the country.
He was a professional angler.
Well, you know what we have to do now. You realize I'm gonna talk you into a fishing report as part of the racing report. You know that, don't you? I'm serious. I've done it.
I've been on so many iHeart podcast shows, fishing shows. The Florida Fishing Report. I don't know if you ever heard of that. Those guys do it down in South Florida. I know those guys pretty good. There's guys that do it out of Maitland, Florida, out of the iHeart radio station. They do it on 96.5 The Game. I've done their morning shows with them several times.
Well, now that you're plugging everybody else on my show, we've got some manufacturer of whatever it was. Now we've plugged another radio station. So all I ask now is that you talk about Action Radio. So, by the way, there's a station that actually has a citizen legislature, and I'm going to send you this right after the show, you know, on our Creative Car Act, because that's something that you guys might want to be able to advocate so that we stop having boring cars out there. The government is so involved with cars, they're boring. I don't want boring cars.
Yeah. Well, it's actually getting to the point where, and correct me if I'm wrong, honey, but they're stopping the make of the Hellcat? This year?
Yeah, next year.
What's that?
Year, yeah.
What's the Hellcat?
It's one of the Dodge.
Hellcat is a... It makes about 797 horsepower.
Okay. Is that too much for the communists? What's the problem here?
I guess the fuel and just all sorts. I'll have to send you... I have an article for it somewhere that I saved. I'll have to send it to you. They're trying to stop productions of all these high-performance cars for all their own BS reasons. I have the article from Dodge. I'll send it to you. It's interesting.
Yeah, so you can include that in your guys' report, too. This is fascinating, you know, just the idea. And this is, you know, the metrosexual girly men that run the Democrat, the fascist, and the deep state Republicans, you know, the whole political, especially the education cabal, you know, the whole idea of, like, you know, toxic masculinity. Well, we can't have competition. We can't have, you know, we can't have excellence. We can't have achievement. We can't have fast cars. The hell with them. I'm going to fight that every, you know, people think of that. Think of politics, you know, when you think of politics, well, it's just, you know, it's Republicans versus Democrats. It's budgets. It's, you know, it's legal. No, it's cars. Cars are our life. You know, cars are huge. I mean, how much time do you spend in a car? Try going somewhere these days without a car. Cars are critical. And you should be able to have I firmly believe you should be able to have fun pretty much everything you do. Some things are boring. Taxes are boring. I'm sorry. You know, you accountants love taxes. God bless you. But it's boring. Okay.
But cars should be fun. All those liberals that are moving from California and Vegas and all those places to come to our country or come to our state, they got to get here somehow.
You know, that is a fascinating slip. Think about that. You just said coming from California to our country. You know, and I think you're absolutely right on. I know
because our Florida is our own country. We have our own.
We really do.
That's why I say our country.
Yeah. So metrosexual girly men and frustrated feminists, you know, from liberal places, socialist places, leave that stuff there. Just leave it there. Come back to America.
Mm-hmm.
We really are two countries, mm-hmm. and that's a great observation. So I'm with you there all the way. And I think you like my Creative Car Act. In fact, you might want to, you know, improve it for me and take a look and see if we can we can do that, because that'd be a great thing. You know, in fact, if the racing industry gets behind this, the industry and the drivers, and they say, you know what, cars are boring. That'd be a hell of a crusade. I think it'd be an amazingly popular thing because cars are boring. And I think it'd be a great way to get racing in everybody's, you know, YouTube and TV. I mean, I know you're popular already, but just the idea that you guys are saying, we're going to fight back. We're going to make interesting cars. That's something people can really relate to. They don't know no national debt. They don't know budgets. They don't know any of this. I mean, you know, they have a rough sense of it.
Yeah.
But when you see, you know, every car looking the same, the four-door aerodynamic sedan, you know, the two-door coupe, you know, coupe, you know, driving down the road, they all look the same. When you see the colors, you know, you look at a 1950s car. White was white, green was green, red was red, and blue was blue. You look at these shades of you know, champagne, gray, silver, off-white. They're boring. The colors are boring. What happened to color?
Yeah.
There's no color in cars anymore. You know, so now you got me on a rant.
Yeah.
this is what I love to do. You know, so how do we make cars interesting again? What do you think?
Well, for one,
I mean,
Cindy first, then we'll get to Matt. Cindy?
Well, I was going to say, you know, you've got so many car enthusiasts that are out there that, you know, you just have no idea, that are so against them wanting to do the electric high-performance cars now, that I'm sure there would be a lot of people that would get behind that legislation.
Okay.
You know, I really believe that, because everybody's complaining about the fact, I mean, just the fact that they're going to stop building – Dodge is going to stop making their highest performing car. because of it. You know, that was a huge hit because, mm-hmm. you know, Dodge is the one that, you know, will take a minivan and put, you know, a Hellcat motor in a minivan. So, you know, they just don't care. But now they're at the point yeah. where they're going to stop production on that. And so now we're getting a little out of hand. People love motors. They love to work mm-hmm. on motors. So what's going to happen to all your mechanics who are working on motors? You know, that's their trade. That's all they know. Now you want to go electric where there's just a battery? I mean, you know how many job losses that's going to cost?
Well, I mean, in the same way that progress does come about, and we don't have, you know, buggy whip and wagon manufacturers. I mean, you can't go, you know, if you were this is the classic example. You don't need buggy whips when you don't have horses and wagons, you know, so you had to learn other things. There's always an adaptation process as new technology comes in. I understand that. But when you have a needless taking away of something, you know, and people, you know, especially, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm wondering how much the wacko environmentalists are affecting you guys, because they say you can't have carbon dioxide. And I have friends of mine like Gregory Wrightstone, who's a climate geologist. So when he studies climate, he's talking about in terms of millions of years. And so he'll take like ice cores, you know, from the Arctic, you know, a mile down, you know, things that have been, you know, and he'll analyze the climate from that. And you look at the impact of carbon dioxide, which is less than 1% of the atmosphere. It's 0.6%. You know, if you have a colander and you try and strain your spaghetti through something with 0.6% coverage, you're going to lose all your spaghetti, okay? In the same way the Earth loses mm-hmm. its heat at night, especially on a clear night. You know, the greatest global warming element out there is water vapor, which we know as clouds. That's what keeps the heat in. That's why cloudy nights, it's warmer the next day than clear nights. Because on a clear night, the heat radiates out. Mm-hmm. So these wackos that don't understand the environment, they're telling you that carbon dioxide, which is actually plant food, and we can have too little carbon dioxide. In fact, we almost did have a critical carbon dioxide shortage in the world. You know, and that was just a naturally occurring thing. Mm-hmm. Now it's building back up again. You know, it was like 10 times as much as it is now when the dinosaurs are around, and they did quite fine for millions of years. You know, so the things that people don't understand, they don't understand that CO2 is good for us, that the impact of your drag racer compared to the volcano in Tonga, you know, or Mount Pinatubo or the Hawaiian volcanoes, those things are going to spew more in a day than all the races have ever spewed ever. Probably all the cars have ever spewed ever,
mm-hmm.
you know, in terms of chemicals mm-hmm. out there. Most of the chemicals, the nitrous oxide, the carbon monoxide, or nitrogen monoxide, carbon monoxide, sulfur monoxide, the things that come out of your tailpipe because of the extreme heat usually turn into sulfur dioxide, nitrogen dioxide, carbon dioxide once they cool down. So elements change. Now, can you make cars cleaner? Sure. That's a great idea. Pollution things? Yeah. But you still want to be able to have the horsepower and have the fun and have the competition with that, you know, so you don't want to sacrifice mm-hmm. what our human spirit is, you know, just for the sake of technology. And what's really going on that I believe is the same as everything else. You've got the those that want to control other people and those of us who want to live free. Okay. And those that want to control other people, they don't mm-hmm. want you to have any fun because they don't want to have fun. They want to be miserable. Mm-hmm. They're happiest when everybody else is miserable, whereas we're happiest when everybody else is happy, you know, and that's the difference. And so the people that want you to be miserable, they mm-hmm. want to take away your horsepower. They want to limit your cars. They want to take away your engines. They want to have you do electric things. They don't want you to go too fast. They don't want you to be too creative. They don't want you, you know, having an independent spirit. You've got to drive the box. You've got to drive the electric box that everybody else is driving. That way we're all equal. And I'm going to rebel against that in every way mm-hmm. I can. But I think through cars, I'm almost done with my rant. I make these up as I go. This is completely unrehearsed, you know. But through cars, we can actually reach people on a level that you can't through things like budget and Supreme Court cases and stuff like that, because people have a daily experience, most people, with a car. And because of that, you know, let's make them fun again, and let racing be preeminent, and the best of racing technology usually ends up in the cars anyway, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
At some point.
Well, I will say that Tesla.
Okay, one at a time. Let's go to Tesla, then we'll go with Matt. So, Cindy?
The Tesla Plaid, you know, it is electric, but that car will outrun me any day on the track. So there are electric cars that, you know, will go, you know, fast down the track and stuff like that, but
mm-hmm.
there's the fun in smelling the race fuel, and I know that's so, you know, wrong to say, but, you know, the smell of race fuel and everything like that
show.
We
celebrate the fumes.
You know, part of the adrenaline. It's part of the adrenaline rush, and, you know, you have a car that just, it's like a wind-up. you know, and you're burning through your electric battery, you know, that car may make two passes on the track, but then you've got to charge his battery for, you know, a while. So with our car, you know, with the American-made motors, you know, you just throw that fuel in there and the nitrous and, you know, you go. You tune it right and you go. There's just it's better to be more involved. I don't know. The more involved you are in the inside of your car, the funner it makes it to drive the car.
Makes sense. Matt?
I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. Matt, you had a comment.
Well, I was going to say I was going to make a shirt that says that hashtag make cars great again. After talking about that, that's a good idea.
You know, that's not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you know, in fact, we may start a car page. I mean, I have several groups here. We have a family law page. You know, we have a special investigations page. We have a homeschool page. You know, I have a regular Action Radio group page. You know, so you guys had no idea what you're in for. Cindy, did you know this was going to happen when you started talking to me? So we're already talking about, you know, the Action Radio car page. Yeah, but this would be a place where we can do what – see, most car groups will report on cars and technology and things like that. We're going to report on legislation. We're going to report on changing cars, making them fun again. So, okay, so I got to set up a new group, Action Radio Car Group. We have a gun group too, by the way. Action Radio Car Group.
And you need a fishing group.
Okay, Matt, you're in charge of the – you want to do a fishing group, Matt? Or you can think about it too. I mean, you don't have to decide right now. Yeah, it'd be fun. Get the angler's angle. Oh, yeah. I'm sure that's been used before.
That'll go with your environmental.
Well, actually, you can do that, too. You know, in fact, our environmental group is the only group that mixes conservatives and liberals on the same environmental group. And so if you post anything to our – that's a really good idea. I'll send you guys, you know, invitations to our environmental group. Or you can just – it's the Action Radio Environmental Action Project is the technical name for it. But I'll send you guys invites. Or you can just ask to join. You know, we can do that too. But yeah, put fishing stuff there. I have everything from, you know, from volcanoes to pelicans. I mean, you know, it's a really interesting site. I do the climate, you know, stuff from Gregory Wrightstone, who wrote a great book. In fact, you might want to look up this stuff too. You know, Inconvenient Truths, you know, which sort of counteracts Gore's inconvenient. No, I think it's Inconvenient Facts, which counteracts Gore's Inconvenient Truths. So, how are the environmental wackos affecting racing? What are they trying to do? Are they trying to close you guys down? Are they trying to change your engines to electric? Or what are they doing? Matt, let me just start with you on this one. What are the climate change wackos doing?
I mean, it's not much that we've really seen on that side. They are closing a lot of tracks, which I just recently found out about this like 2 weeks ago. There is a lot of tracks around the country that are closing down, and a few here in Florida too. Actually, me and a buddy were talking about it. That's big into racing because they're talking about all the street racing deaths that have been happening lately. Well, they're shutting all the tracks down. For what reason? We don't know at this point. We were actually just talking
about building
that last week.
Yeah, no, we need to be building tracks.
Right.
This is another good thing on the racing page.
And
you need to build
and
tracks.
They're not. They're closing them down.
Yeah.
A bunch of tracks up north shut down. They closed two tracks down in South Florida. And now FHP wants to know why they're getting all these, you know, racing deaths, and well, they're shutting all the tracks down. I mean, people are going to do it regardless on the road, but you know, there's two tracks left in Florida. There's Orlando Speed World and Bradenton, right? Is that the one, babe? Bradenton? Or is it Palm Beach?
Palm Beach is still open, but not to the public. It's like the No Prep Kings are going there in April. So they're just like professional NHRA races. They're not doing public races.
Okay.
So there's technically
three. I don't think these wacko people are really affecting it too much on the racing side. I mean, I'm sure it is. It's probably more I can definitely dig into and find. That could be a reason why the tracks are shutting down. I know a lot of them are plaints and maybe funding from the whole, I don't know what to call it because I don't call it coronavirus, but whatever you want to call it.
Oh, the Omicold?
It could be
I got the Omicold.
Yeah, it's just.
Well, we do shows. This is why you know, this is why I wanted to have you guys on. Do you believe? But you've been on almost an hour and a half already. This is how fast this has gone today. This is wild. But yeah, the whole Corona thing. I've got, you know, shows upon shows. Just to, you know, talk about some of the Action Radio first again. I actually wrote a bill. back in February of 2020 to say that Congress can only spend half their money on vaccines and the other half has to be on treatments and cures. You know, so we were way ahead of it. We knew, I broadcast March 2nd of 2020. This is 2 weeks before the 15 days to slow the spread. Study out of Marseille, France by Dr. Didier Raoult that chloroquine kills COVID. So we've covered this issue so long and so much. And these ideas, I mean, they're using COVID to stop everything. You know, you guys don't wear, I mean, do your spectators wear masks or are they just, I mean, I imagine racing fans are a pretty independent bunch.
Last time we were at the track, I honestly think I saw two people out of maybe the 400 people at the track that had a mask on. Maybe
okay,
two.
That's good. That's good.
Listen, yeah. If we're breathing in the fumes of race fuel and rubber, and that's not killed us, we're good.
Well, are there any particular health effects? Have they documented that over time, maybe you would be better, I don't know, with like an air system in your car or something like that? Have there been any adverse effects of race fumes and rubber and all that kind of? Anybody document anything?
Personally heard of it.
Okay.
But I'm sure there is.
I mean, the body cleans
itself.
That's all
stuff that's Google,
and that's where they...
Yeah.
I'm sure there's something
natural.
Out there.
Okay, Matt first, then we'll get to Cindy. Matt?
Oh, no, I was just saying I'm sure there's stuff out there on the old interweb that states stuff like that. It's just some research that I have to do. I'm sure I can come up with something, but the old Google button, I'm sure, has stuff about it. But who knows? Nothing that we've heard of anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, I have enough doctor folks. I can ask them. We have, in fact, tomorrow, Cindy Cagle from Citizens for Medical Freedom. These are some of the folks that are working against these vaccine mandates and other things like that. They haven't required that of you guys, have they? Are there any – is it like the international drag racing association? They're not doing anything stupid like requiring vaccines or anything like that, are they? Okay, good.
Yeah.
Because those things – because soccer players in Europe are dropping like by the hundreds. From the vaccine. There's huge effects on athletes.
Oh, yeah.
It's really devastating what's going on there. Yeah. 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 Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I've covered pretty much everything I wanted to talk about. And like I said, I figured I'd have you guys on for half an hour, maybe 45 minutes. And it's like, we're almost coming up to an hour and a half. So
well,
I'm going to have to play some
is...
other stuff here in a little bit. But yeah, go ahead. Yeah. What do you want, Cindy?
If I could say, how you and
say
I
you want.
Became connected. Huh? I'm sorry.
I said you can say whatever you want. Any subject's fair game at this point. We've covered racing extraordinarily. I'm really happy. So we've got a really good view out there of what that is. So yeah, let's do politics. Cindy.
So that's how you and I actually came to be, and I do want to bring up this because it's very upsetting and disconcerting. So especially seeing on the news yesterday, they're talking about pediatric COVID cases on the rise at hospitals. I literally have the proof. We have the proof that that is falsified. Our son had to go to the emergency room, not last week, but the week before. Was it last week, babe? I can't remember. But they COVID tested him because he has asthma. He has chronic, asthma. We didn't have any more of the albuterol, the breathing treatment. And his doctor wasn't going to see him because, everything resembles COVID symptoms. So we took him to the ER. They put us on the COVID side because of breathing. And they tested him. I had tested him at home twice. He was negative. They tested him again at the hospital. Finally, they came about us, put us in the room. It was negative. The doctor looked at him, listened to him. He ruled it as asthma. I have a patient portal set up. So I take very, I'm very involved in our health notes and this and that. So I go in and I look at the stuff and I see that on there, it's not just under differential diagnosis, but under other diagnosis spots in the health notes that says he was diagnosed with COVID.
Mm-hmm.
He was diagnosed with a viral illness and asthma is the third. On our discharge papers, he was only diagnosed with asthma. We got the Florida Department of Health, the test results, the certificate, saying he was negative for COVID. So why did the doctor, and I'm not bashing the doctor. He was
I know
a doctor,
why.
And I'm sure it's just all hospital
No,
it's
I know
because
why.
Of the numbers.
I know why. Well,
so right
the
there,
numbers.
That is proof. If anybody needed proof, oh, you can't prove it. Show me proof. Right here is proof. Right
yep.
here is proof. And then on the news yesterday, they sat there and said pediatric cases in the hospital are on the rise because of the Omicron variant. I'm telling you right now, I told my husband last night, I said, and how many of those are actually true?
And how many of those are vaccine related? That's the other question. Yeah. So if COVID's on the – see, the vaccine spreads COVID. I felt for about a year now that this is all been a marketing campaign, that the vaccine was actually developed back at around 2010 when Moderna was formed as a company, that this has all been engineered, that and the folks that say, well, they're trying to kill half the world's population. I don't believe that for a second because people is power. So if you're a globalist, you want a bigger globe. Mm-hmm. You want more power. So the idea and power comes from money. It comes from government laws and it comes from money. And they're using both. They're using government laws to make money. And so the more people they can get listed as COVID. See, here's the way this Matt, let me get you on this. Do you know the answer to this? Because I've got some pretty good information from reports that I've already done on this. So Matt, what's your feeling? What do you think is behind all this? Why would they list COVID when you didn't have COVID?
Money.
Matt?
That's
exactly.
Money.
Do you know where? Do you know where from?
They get paid. The government pays them more when it's COVID related.
Yep. Exactly.
It's money.
Let me tell you how bad
this
is.
They pay more to label it. And speaking of that, I'm just seeing an article now. Despite the Federal Drug Administration decision to revoke emergency use of the antibody, Florida is now still going to offer it because DeSantis was able to get some unlocked. This just posted it 9 minutes ago on Channel 9 News.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yet another station he plugs. I'm having fun. I'm having fun with you today.
I don't think he's plugging it. I think.
No, I know. No, I'm teasing you.
I think he's backing it up.
No, I'm teasing you.
He's backing up his research.
No, that's that's really interesting.
But,
you know, here's the thing. Yeah, go ahead, Cindy.
Well, I was just going to say, in regards to the monoclonal antibody treatment, you know, DeSantis had all the stock, back when the Delta variant hit, us and our kids got it. And we were, you know, feeling down. We never had breathing issues or anything like that. It just felt like the flu on steroids. Mm-hmm. And so instead of doing any of these experimental drugs that the government wants you to do, we went and got the antibody treatment.
Okay.
And within an hour, we were fine. We were better. Our fevers were gone.
Wow.
We could eat. We were hungry. That treatment works. And I cannot
plug that. That's monoclonal antibodies,
enough,
right?
Because
so people
it
understand.
Works.
Monoclonal
yes.
antibodies.
Yeah.
Yes.
Was that Regeneron or was it a different brand name? I don't. You know, okay. All right. So it works.
Regeneron that we got.
So, we did the shot, too. We did the infusion. We did the three needles.
Okay.
Four.
Because you had an option, infusion, or you got three separate shots.
Four.
Yeah, shots are easier, I would think, than an IV.
Yeah.
I hate IVs. I've had them, but, you know. Yeah. I had open heart surgery, so I've been through the intrusive operation already. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the crazy thing about it is the fact that it has worked, and it has, and, you know, Florida has been up and going this entire pandemic. In fact, Florida's pretty much forgot about that there's a pandemic. We're trying to forget about it.
Well, there isn't a pandemic.
And then,
hasn't been a pandemic since July of 2020, and I can prove it. I've got the CDC charts from July of 2020 when the trend was for zero for deaths from COVID. I'll send it to you.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead, Cindy. Yeah.
Yeah, but so they have this treatment that worked, and it wasn't just us. It was other people. A friend of ours, she was exposed to us, and she was exposed to people that had it also. So she went and got the treatment just because she was exposed, and she never got it. She never got COVID. So she got – you can get the treatment even if you've been exposed. So she got the treatment. She never got it.
Yeah.
So DeSantis got this, made it free for everybody. Mm-hmm. Biden didn't like that. Let's go, Brandon. He didn't like that, and
listen.
So he shut it down.
Yeah. No, he didn't shut it down. Dr. Fascist shut it down. So let me give you the title of – you know who I mean by Dr. Fascist, right? The one and only Anthony Fauci. So his full title is Dr. Fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic, avaricious, pathologically lying vaccine drug pusher. That's what we call him around here.
Mm-hmm.
He is the most evil man on the planet and one of the most evil people that's ever lived. He's killed more people than the Civil War, single-handedly, by withholding medical treatments. Now, the government, under Dr. Fascist, is basically, they're using death to sell vaccines. And they're using death to create fear. Mm-hmm. They don't want anything to get in the way of their vaccines and their insane profits. I don't even call them profits. I call it extortion. Because anytime you have a fascist, and this is the true definition of fascism, is corporate uniting with government. That's what fascism is. And so you have, you know, big tech, the censorship. I'm being censored all the time. You've got big pharma, which is actually making the billions by producing this, which the taxpayers are paying for. And you've got big government health. And that would be the FDA, CDC, NIH, those folks. They're all working together, plus the cooperative, you know, suck up media. So they're all working together against us, you know, against we the people, to force this upon us with misinformation, fear, propaganda, and it's something called a mass psychosis. And if you go to a YouTube channel, Academy of Ideas, and look up some of their couple of videos on mass psychosis, about 10, 12 minutes each, fascinating. So that's what's going on now. So people are being terrified into taking something that's actually more dangerous than the actual virus, a lot more so. And again,
well,
the alpha strain.
Well, you can't even call it a vaccine.
We don't.
You can't even call it a vaccine. It's not a vaccine. It's a genetic mRNA or whatever.
It's a little mRNA, messenger RNA. Yeah, RNA is what gives the instructions to replicate DNA. DNA is what makes up your cells. It's the code of your body. Deoxyribonucleic acid. Mm-hmm. That's what DNA is. And what it is amino acids that form proteins that form, that create the genes and the chromosomes. I'm not sure how it all works. I'm not that good a scientist. But we've had people that are.
Well,
we've had Dr. Blanco on the show. We've had Dr. Mikovits. What's that, Matt?
We have a perfect person that could explain. We have a good buddy of ours. His name is James. He actually has a PhD, and he actually works with one of the companies that does one of the drugs. I can't remember which one it is. Is it Moderna or one of the other ones?
Yeah, I would be careful with names of people in private, people who are non-public figures. I don't want to give names out too much yet, just because you better talk to them first. Before they, you know, just
right.
To sort of protect.
But
yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. He, from the very beginning, he was one of the ones that told us every single reason about all this stuff and why not to do it. And he does that stuff.
Let's get him on the show.
It's crazy though. He'd be a good guy for you to talk to, even not even on air. Just, he could give you a standpoint that maybe you haven't even heard.
Okay. Well, I like talking on the air because it's more fun. I mean,
right.
This is a talk show, but a lot of times, like I say, I don't like, a lot of times I won't talk, when I first started doing this, I mean, I would talk to people off the air and kind of go over stuff, and then I found we were rehashing it on the show, and it was less spontaneous because we already talked about it, so it actually made for a worse show. It's much better, this is why I didn't talk to you guys, you know, ahead of time, because I want to get you, you know, on the show and like have my discovery be original and genuine, and it certainly has been. You're still here. I have another guest. I have my Chancy Tate comes on at 8 o'clock, which would be 9 o'clock for you guys. So that's and that's our regular, you know, wine, weed, and wellness Wednesday report. Which is kind of, you can stick around for that too if you want. I got to play a couple things here in a little bit though, just because you know we haven't taken a break yet, which is kind of funny.
Oh, I gotta go. Our baby is waking up. So from his
why don't we do that then? Let both of you go. So closing statements, things you want to do, guests that you want to bring on, talk to me, you know, and if it's a racing guest or a political guest, obviously let's start at 6 o'clock, you know, next week, and we'll see where we go. So we can do racing, we can do politics, we can do whatever, because, you know, this is definitely an interesting thing. And listen tomorrow at 6:30, so 7:30 your time, if you get a chance to listen. Hey, listen while you're driving. Just hook your phone in, you know, play action radio from your phone, connect it to your vehicle audio. You know, that works too, and that way you can always catch us even when you're driving. But I think do you know Cindy already? Do you know Cindy Cakel? Cindy Ann, are you guys associated or no? You guys friends already? Because if not, you're going to be. Okay, all right, I'll get you guys connected.
Uh-uh.
That's what we do here, yeah. All right, okay. Closing statements of racing and politics. Let's get those. Let's get you guys
in the racing names, go and...
Okay.
We'll
figure out a name.
You two work about that. Yeah, you guys figure that one out, and we'll go from there.
Okay.
And...
okay. Thanks, Matt. Cindy Ann, you got a closing, and then we'll talk to you next week.
Just thanks for having us on, and, you know, I like the fact of bringing awareness for the car enthusiasts of what's, you know, I like what Matt said about make cars great again. And I like, you know, to continue. I'm very big into politics and into racing. So I think that it's a good fit.
I think so, too. In fact, I might make the name of the group Make Cars Great Again. Action Radio, Make Cars Great Again. Or maybe you guys can take that one. I'll just do the Action Radio Car Group. We'll figure
it out.
There you
go.
Thank you
both.
Yeah, thank you both so much. This has been really fun. And so do you have a name of your racing team?
Yeah, well,
you want to plug that in your next race? If you want to do that, then we'll then
so our so our YouTube is MCS_motorsports. And our Instagram account is Mopars_beauty. That's the name of our car. So go follow us and subscribe to our channel. And there's going to be a lot more coming now that the car is getting nitrous finished. There's going to be a lot more racing going on this year.
And all I can ask is if you can mention, you know, somewhere, you know, doing what are we going to call this? The Matt and Cat. What's our title of our whatever you come up for a title, just to say, you know, appearing on Action Radio, you know, 7 a.m.
Yeah,
Eastern
absolutely.
Time. You know, that'll help us out too. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
No, definitely.
And maybe some,
thanks for having us.
Maybe
on.
Some big company will sponsor us both. Who knows? This should be interesting. Thank you, guys.
Well, we have a lot of sponsors, so I'm sure we can get.
I've got one guy in particular already that I'm thinking about. So.
Okay. Excellent. Because once we become a worldwide movement, I'm actually talking to folks in New Zealand, Australia, and Israel right now about working with them to change the laws that allow governments to create mandates. So we're going to have model legislation around the world. This is going to be a worldwide movement. I mean, Action Radio, people don't know it yet just because we're being suppressed so badly by big tech, but that's going to change. And once we break out, this is going to be a really big deal. So I'm glad you guys are in now, because once you're part of the family, you know, unless something changes, then, you know, you'll stick around. So when we have a million, then 5 million, then 10 million listeners, this is going to be a big deal. And let's make cars great again.
Yeah. Sounds good. Hey, thanks again for having us on the show.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Next week. Okay. Bye now.
All right. See you.
Bye-bye.
Isn't this fun? Did you guys expect we'd have a directing show? Did you expect? I didn't know. We've got over an hour and a half, and this is the nice thing about Action Radio. I love being the boss here, so that when something is this good, I can just keep it going. All right, let's take a little break now. We've got Chancey Terry coming up at the top of the hour, and so let me start off with our founding moments for this week, which is Anti-Federalist number 8, and so I kind of like this one. Just because it's, you know, especially if you know Federalist number 8, if you've been following along with the show, I'm much more in favor of the Anti-Federalists. And I'm as much as I love the Constitution, now that I see what the Articles of Confederation had, and this week I'll be looking into some of the things that Congress did under the Articles of Confederation. And I'm going to try and figure out what was so bad about the Articles of Confederation that the Constitutional Convention couldn't have just fixed that. You know, instead of creating this whole new government. And it's ironic that all the things that the Federalists said would be prevented by the Constitution were actually caused by it. You know, when they said the states would break into confederations and go to war, it was after the Constitution we had the Civil War. You know, when they talked about all the different things the states would be in conflict. Well, some of the other things, I'll have to go back and research it. But the point being that where we are now, you look at the federal government, you know, the overbearing, over-debted, over-controlling federal government. I mean, even in the fact of making cars great again, I think that's going to be fun. This entire new roadway, if I can use the analogy, just open up to us. And so everybody drives a car, or at least most people do. We're going to talk more about this. I'll be back in a bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Anti-Federalist number 8 was written by a federal Republican. That was the name they gave. The author, rather than go over the incredibly repetitive and fallacious arguments of Alexander Hamilton and the other Federalists, who were simply making up horrors in order to scare people into ratifying the Constitution, The author here starts with the Articles of Confederation and what made them successful. A Federal Republican says, "By the Articles of Confederation, the Congress of the United States was vested with powers for conducting the common concerns of the continent. They had the sole and exclusive right and power of determining on peace and war, of sending and receiving ambassadors, of entering into treaties and alliances, and of pointing out the respective quotas of men and men which shall each state furnish." This pretty much takes care of the flawed argument that the states could not defend themselves or each other, and are not automatically guaranteed to fall into a few confederations declaring and waging war on each other. That simply didn't happen under the Articles of Confederation, much as the Federalists said it would without the brand new and very different Constitution. People, including me, tend to forget that there was a working Congress operating under the Articles of Confederation, preserving liberty and providing for the national defense. That will be the subject of my next report. The author goes on, "But it was expressly provided that the money to be supplied by each state should be raised by the authority and direction of the legislature thereof, thus reserving to the states the important privilege of levying taxes upon their citizens in such manner as might be most comfortable to their peculiar circumstances and form of government. With powers thus constituted, was Congress enabled to unite the general exertions on the continent in the cause of liberty and to carry us triumphantly through a long and bloody war." Money, which means taxes. One of the most important principles of a republic is taxation with representation. The closer the government to the people, the better the representation. That's why the states should tax their citizens and pass on the required amount to the federal government with no direct taxation from the federal government on the people. And here in one paragraph, the author lays out the entire problem with not only the Constitution, but the disastrous way it was put together and released to the people and states to ratify. A Federal Republican says, "Upon this principle, a General Convention of the United States was proposed to be held, and deputies were accordingly appointed by 12 of the states charged with power to revise, alter, and amend the Articles of Confederation. When these deputies met, instead of confining themselves to the powers with which they were entrusted, they pronounced all amendments to the Articles of Confederation wholly impracticable, and, with a spirit of amity and concession truly remarkable, proceeded to form a government entirely new and totally different in its principles and its organization. Every problem and future catastrophe that befell this country after the ratification of the Constitution can be traced in origin right here to this paragraph. There was no reason to come up with a completely new document, and therefore a new form of government when amending the Articles of Confederation would probably have been just fine at the time. And then, gradually over time, new concepts for better government could have been amended in. But given the federal government has become every evil the anti-federalists warned us about in these papers, it turns out that history proved them to be right. The Constitutional Convention should have stuck to simply amending the Articles of Confederation." The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it.
Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements, and we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com, besmallbusiness. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
Okay, I think I've played pretty much everything I can play and everything I need to play over the course of the show today. So, yeah, it's that was so much fun. And, you know, and again, this is what I love about what we do here, not having a boss or a program director or an operations director or, a large, corporate entity over us. You know, like so many of the broadcast companies, they're under some big holding company, international, whatever. We can just do what we want. And so over the course of the first hour and a half today, I had no idea what to expect. I never actually talked to Cindy before. Matt, I just learned, wanted to join us last night. And so the idea of having, husband and wife drag racing team on the show, I thought was really kind of cool. But I didn't know what to expect. I wasn't sure where it was going to go. I know Cindy and I had talked a lot of politics before, too, and they're extremely active. I mean, the things that, pretty much all of us, that listen to the show are active in. And so this was a really great, great thing to be able to do. In fact, you know what? I forgot to do the live chat. So we've been so busy. I didn't set up the live chat yet. So let me do that right now while I'm thinking about it. Then I have an article I want to get to before Chancey gets here. And we'll talk about something completely different, wine, weed, and wellness. So sorry I didn't do the live chat earlier. So if you try to do something earlier and you're still around, if you want to do something here. So what's on your mind? Your mind. Sort of wrapping around my microphone right now, so that might not work as well. Here we go. Okay, so live chat set up. So you want to comment on anything? But that was just fun. But here's the thing: we got to talking about the Creative Car Act, which I wrote a long time ago, about making cars great again because cars are boring, and just the spirit of adventure and vehicles and the fun and bringing the fun back into automobiles because the fun's out of it. It's you look at these government regulated vehicles. There's so much. That's taken away from you, that all the cool stuff is gone. And so anyway, so you know what I'm talking about here. All right, looks like I'm wondering looks like Chancey's in a bit early. I'm going to bring her on now, but I want to do an article first, and we'll get a reaction to that. Hey, Chancey, did you have a chance to, I don't know if you did or not, because, you guys are all busy, and you're not as much a morning person as I am now, because I do the show early. Did you get a chance to listen to our first little bit here?
No, sir. I'm just hopping on.
Okay. All right. That's good. Well, that's the beauty of podcasts is that you can catch this later. And I understand that. I'm one of the few that I'm here every day because it's my show. But there's so much here, and everybody has busy lives. So catch what you can. That's why we do show notes, so that you can listen to the part of the show that you want to listen to. But we're talking Creative Car Act. We're talking a new Action Radio car group. We've got racing folks. We may even have a racing industry sponsor sponsoring Action Radio one day. I mean, the things that just happened in the previous hour and a half are amazing. And it's just, that's what makes this so much fun. So hang out with me for a little bit. I'm going to go through a Gatestone article here on Ukraine, and then we're going to get to your report. It should take, in fact, we'll probably coincide directly with the top of the hour. But just how are you doing this morning? Everything's good? You feeling good?
Oh, yeah, we're good. We're going to say good. That's all that I can say is that it's good. Good to be alive.
Okay. Well, yeah, it beats the alternative. Even when life is crazy, it's still good. Because at least we're here, doing stuff. Yeah. Well, go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, you're fine. Go ahead. I'm here for it. I'm just along for the ride.
Okay. Sounds good to me. Yeah, me too. Because I never know what's going to happen. This is the fun of this. All right. So Gatestone Institute is one of my new go-to sources. You don't hear about them a lot, but they do some really good writing. In fact, I think I'm getting a little background noise from you, so I'm just going to mute you for a little bit, Chancey. You're there, and I'll call on you a little bit once I get through this article, and we'll get onto your stuff. I'll probably go through it faster, this way. Anyway, so this is about Biden's Last Mayhem. It's by Lawrence Kadish from January 25th, so that would be yesterday. He says it should not be surprising that Russian strongman Vladimir Putin believes he can invade Ukraine, sovereign neighboring nation, and claim it it's ahistoric. Let me correct that once and for all. Okay, you guys that don't speak English properly, in Britain, in England, the H's are usually silent. So it'd be historic, In other words, they don't go historic as we do here. So to say an historic is rather awkward. That's why they say an historic, as it would be in a British accent. But because this is America, we say it would be a historic part of the empire. I don't know why I got onto that. English is a pet peeve of mine. All right. A historic part of his empire. Anyway, so the article says, after all, there is a shameful European history to reflect upon, combined with the most recent actions of the United States under the current White House. Yeah, it's a regime. It's an insurrection. It's not a real presidency. And that is one of the biggest problems we have here. Article says, in 1938, Western democracies were more than willing to hand over a free and stable Central European nation to Hitler. The Czechs found themselves abandoned and served up on a plate to the Third Reich as a threat in war if the Sudetenland region of Czechoslovakia was not annexed by Germany. The reason for his demand was that it was territory long populated by many ethnic Germans. And this may sound disturbingly familiar if you follow Putin's logic why Ukraine is, you know, is his, given that part of the diverse population is Russian. Some 84 years ago, Britain's Neville Chamberlain conspired with the French to appease Hitler and telling a BBC audience how horrible, fantastic, incredible it is that we should be digging trenches and trying on gas masks here because of a quarrel in a faraway country between people of whom we know nothing. Okay, so he's talking about World War I. But we actually backed into World War II, Europe backed into World War II, trying to avoid the horrors of World War I. It's kind of interesting. They raced into World War I, and they backed into World War II. And, you know, two different directions ended up in the same place. Article goes on. The deal forced onto the Czech leadership by the democracies was that the Sudetenland would become part of the Reich, but the rest of the nation would be secure. That's just laughable on its face. It was cynical nonsense, of course. Hitler sensed the moral bankruptcy of the democracies within 12 months, and within 12 months would take over the rest of Czechoslovakia. He did it without firing a shot and without the democracies confronting him. Yeah, the same thing happened to Austria, folks, if you remember, called the Anschluss. Anyway, article says, past history with the actions of, I'll say, U.S. insurrectionist Joe Biden, who unilaterally pulled our troops out of Afghanistan, what I'm calling a surrender, thereby handing the Taliban a stunning strategic victory. And it should be no surprise that Putin believes this administration has neither the will nor the courage to stand up to what is an act of stunning aggression. Unlike the Czechs, however, the Ukrainians have no illusions about their foe or the White House. There must have been more than startled looks and a few profane oaths when they heard Biden initially describe the potential Russian threat to Ukraine as a minor incursion. Yeah, that came out of his, you know, joking press conference a little bit ago. The insurrectionist quickly went into damage control mode, then acknowledging it would be an invasion. If the Russians cross the border, they have the means to brush aside Ukraine's conventional forces, who will seek to defend their homeland. There is little doubt that the Russians will face a determined, courageous, and stubborn opponent in the Ukrainians, who are just as tough, if not tougher, than the Russian shock troops that invade. It will not be a parade for Putin, but did it even need to even come to this? Like Hitler, Putin is a high-stakes international war game player, fully prepared to use his military as part bluff, part checkmate. Like Hitler, he seeks to recreate a lost empire. Like Hitler, his people are expert at sowing disinformation, and now they have the added weapon of using social media and letting loose their professional hackers. But if Hitler had been confronted with a resolute, focused, and vigorous Chamberlain, would he have even considered his demand for the Sudetenland? Would the word appeasement being some minor footnote in the history book rather than Chamberlain's disastrous strategy that led to the world's worst calamities? That is where we are today. If Putin believed that a strong, steadfast, and determined president was in the Oval Office, that would be Trump, folks, in case you're looking for a translation here, okay? A determined president was in the Oval Office, would he have ever considered sitting down with him to play the most dangerous war game imaginable? Not likely. And our author here, Lawrence Kedish, serves on the board of governors of Gatesville Institute. So it's an interesting group here. There's more articles and things like that, but we're approaching the 8 o'clock hour. So totally off topic for Chansey. She's a wine, weed, and wellness. That's the name of her report person. You know what they call alternative medicine, what I call medicine. You know, so. So Chansey, as a non-professional political analyst and not necessarily well versed in foreign affairs, where do you think we are? Just to put you on the spot.
Oh God! I think we're fixing to have a war.
Yeah.
Is that okay to say? And it's going to be women. It's going to be a completely different thing than we've seen before. I feel like it's going to be when you start messing with the children. I've said it for probably about 6 or 8 months now. Start messing with the children, and you're going to get Mama Bear. So I don't know what that means. I don't think there'll be weapons involved, but mass pulling out of schools, you know, it's just going to be bad, and it's going to be good.
You're talking about a different war, though. You're not talking Ukraine. You're talking about here.
Yeah, here.
Watch
it? Yeah, on
oh, okay.
Turf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's okay.
You're gonna have...
you segued, but you didn't tell me. I'm thinking Ukraine.
Oh,
so yeah. So that's
gonna
okay.
be here. At
yeah.
your house, you know, like in your yard. But yeah, uh-huh.
Okay.
That's because that's where I see is again, I like a, you completely nailed it. I'm not well versed at all about what goes on outside of here or what
see,
has happened.
I want
happened.
Those opinions
but,
too. You know,
yeah,
because your opinion counts because there are millions of people across this country that are wondering, first of all, they don't even know where Ukraine is. They've never seen it on a map. They've never looked on a map. I had to look on a map, you know, and I'm pretty good at world
right.
geography, you know, and I still wanted to find
yeah.
out exactly where it is. And I found this huge, you know, river system running through it. We're talking to Josh yesterday from Illinois, and because he's, I think he's either has ancestors in that part of the world or family. He was in, you know, visited Georgia at one point and, I think was also in some of the other places down that way. But yeah, it's interesting. It's really interesting to think why are we going to what is this all about? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the Ukraine and Russia thing, that is like again, I don't know anything, but I have clients telling me that their kids are being deployed and they don't know where they're going and that it's Russia or Ukraine or somewhere in that area and they're not allowed to tell where they're going.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happening
yeah.
right now, you know. So, I mean, yeah, who knows what that's going to do, but they vaccinate your child and send them across the country, and if they have a heart attack or a stroke from the training, you won't know about it for a while, so because they're not allowed to call you, and then that's when the parents will start getting wind of their kids literally dead, which is morbid, but that's where we have to get the sugarcoating and the it's going to be okay and so-and-so's going to live and be fine needs to come to a halt, and people need to understand that it's real and that people are getting injured left and right, and it's affecting their future. And that these parents who have been convinced to jab their kids and jab themselves, when death starts knocking at their door, they're going to revolt and they're going to blame, even though they should blame themselves, unfortunately, they're going to blame the doctors and the schools and all the things. And I don't know where that's headed, but they need wine and weed is all I know. It's going to be a fun adventure. And I'm just watching it happen because, you know, I'm not involved in it. I don't have any children or anything, but I do have a niece. And I have, and her mother is very passionate about her daughter, which is the way most parents are. And so you start messing with the baby chick, and the mom comes and flogs your eyeballs out. So,
oh, listen,
I don't know.
You got some fathers out there too. Remember the father that was arrested
yeah,
at that
yeah.
meeting at Loudoun County. So
father
it's you know, don't discount
yeah.
the dads. And I know you're not doing that, but I'm just saying I want to make the point being a father myself
yeah.
that you know you don't want Papa Bear out there either because Papa Bear
no,
is a mean guy. You know, and Papa Bear will
no.
come out. It's just as Mama Bear will come out, and you're going to have
yeah.
and there's a revolution going on in this country right now. I'm going to make Pianki's on too. I'm going to make his line live. But we are literally in a revolution. Now, the good part of this revolution is we're not firing shots. You know, this is not a traditional revolution, but we're firing media. We're firing social media. We're our shots are actually electronic at this point, which is a whole lot better than bullets, infinitely better. And I hope it stays this way. But we're in, make no mistake about it, our government's declared war on us. You know, if they're forcing vaccines that kill kids, you got European soccer
yeah.
players that are dropping by the hundreds, literally the hundreds.
Yeah.
You know, because their hearts have swollen up. They're in
yeah.
probably one of the most athletic sports there is, which is soccer. I mean, you don't stop. There's no timeouts, there's no huddle. You know, you don't have
mm-hmm.
the defense and the offense. You play the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
And the ball goes, you know,
right.
it goes back and forth really fast. So like basketball in that respect, although I don't think they substitute in soccer. Maybe they do, but once you're in, you're in. And so these guys, these poor people that are being forced to take this jab for a disease that they're virtually immune to by virtue of their age and athletic ability, you know, is insane. And yet
mm-hmm.
the world's gone nuts in a mass psychosis. Pianki, let's get your thoughts here real quick, and then we'll get on to – Chansey only has limited time this morning, so we're going to make sure I get her report in. But Pianki, welcome to the show. Did you like our drag racing segment?
Well, good morning. I just got one little short thing. So I wouldn't compare a Joe Biden – with Hitler. Joe Biden is nowhere the intelligence of that man.
No, they compared Putin with Hitler. It was a Putin-Hitler comparison in the
no.
article. And I don't
yeah,
like comparing
I thought
anybody
I heard
with Hitler.
Someone.
No, Joe Biden's no Hitler.
Compare
no.
Joe Biden with Hitler. That's ridiculous. He's no Joe Biden nowhere has the type of intelligence.
No, he's more. I'm trying to think of a comic figure in history. So he's more the absent-minded professor, except he's not a professor because he's not smart enough. You know, he's the look at any movie where there's a figurehead puppet leader. That's who he is. You know, with the real power being behind him. He's like the head of a Grouch Brothers, Marx Brothers. There we go. Think, Greg. It's been a crazy morning already. So the head of Fredonia. You know, he'd be the figurehead of a made up country in a Marx Brothers movie. That's who he is. He's certainly no Hitler.
Yeah, and United States is not in no position to fight no war economically. Mm-hmm. Equipment-wise, Ukraine is a large expanse of geography. And, the oil and gas that's in the Caspian Sea that Russia will want to take over to Europe would have to pass through the Ukraine there at the corner. So there's the question about that also.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is all geopolitical, environmental, strategic. It's a whole big mess. Let's hold off on that for a little bit. We can talk about that because Chancy is going to be here to the bottom of the hour. And then I'll make sure. Then we have the rest of the show to
Hi, Chancy.
This kind of stuff.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine.
You guys talk before or no? Is this first time? I'm just curious.
This is the only time we talk. Yeah.
Okay, well, welcome. Yeah, Pianki's a regular caller, citizen legislator. He's got a bill on separating the ballots between federal and state, and occasionally, serves as co-host of the show when things have been a little quieter. But things are doing really well. Yeah, without Pianki, we wouldn't have a show. Okay, so let's get on to what's on your mind and wine, weed, wellness, and then especially if you want to talk about what's going on. Here's one for you. Something I wanted to ask you about just before you get started. This situation at Boston Hospital, there's a guy there that refuses to get the jab, the gene shot, and he's up for a heart transplant. Now, why the hell would they insist on a heart transplant, considering the damage that the jab does to the heart with spike proteins and plus every other organ in your body? Why would you take somebody that's in one of the most vulnerable times in their life? And I've had open heart surgery. I had a valve repaired. Okay, not even a transplant, just a valve repaired. And that was a huge operation. And the idea of getting some kind of messenger RNA chemical experimental jab in my arm, I wouldn't have taken it before heart surgery. And this person before a heart transplant, this is insane. What's happening in the medical community, Chancy? Because you've got some insight into not being in the medical, but being in the wellness community. It's a totally different thing. What's your take on this? What kind of irrationality is going through these people's minds? Or is it just the money? They're just making the money on the jab. What do you think?
There is no rationale at that point. And so they're just trying to kill him. They know that he dies during heart surgery, that he needs to be a COVID patient. So it needs to say that he got the vaccine. I mean, it's just period, ABC 123, like give him the jab and then they go on the docket and then we get paid and then whatever happens to him happens to him. So, and I mean, that's so funny because my sister-in-law sent me that article and I halfway read it and was like, well, yeah, I mean, that's going to happen everywhere. I've got, people are going to have kidney stones and they're not going to treat you until you get the shot. And then it causes kidney failure. So it's mass genocide. And so that's where we're at. And nobody wants to believe that that's what they're doing, but they're doing it slowly so that it looks like they're not doing it. And it's in the 70-year-olds and up is usually where they're going to target. They do target, the underage, like lower than that. Just depends on your health. If you've got diabetes, they want you. If you've got heart failure, they want you. Because it's kind of like both sides, because that's what they want us to see. They don't want us to kind of have the answer. It's the, well, why are they killing young people? Well, why, if they were doing that, why would they be killing these people who are rich? I don't know, but I do know that a lot of sick people are the ones dying, and they do cost a lot of money to the world, like insurance and all that. So it's like, let's get rid of the sick people that are sicker and that are just already leaving. Let's get rid of them and then move forward. And I'm not saying that's what I want to do. I'm just saying it makes sense because that's what, I mean, it sucks, but that's what they've done forever. And going back to Hitler, it's just, and the where you said Biden doesn't compare to Hitler, it's kind of like once there's already a genius out there who's figured it out, nobody has to be as smart. They just copycat. So even though Biden doesn't even know what he's doing, it's not that, and he probably isn't doing the exact same thing. He looks like a Hitler because of what's happening, but it's because Hitler already did it. And there's all, just like with songs, like the song's already been written. I can kind of like rewrite it and make it sound a certain way, and it sounds like I did something. But if the original song hadn't been written, you couldn't do anything. So
Yeah.
I'm always
leery of comparisons to Hitler because nobody's like Hitler except Hitler. So I'm going to disagree with you on that comparison. And I don't see this, I think as far as the genocide goes, this is a genocide of older people. You know, if you take any communist society, the most useless people to them are those that can't work and pay taxes or that they can't extract money from. And so once you're beyond working age, they have no use for you. One of the things I learned when I visited East Germany, in East Berlin. This is before the Berlin Wall came down. I met a couple of folks there. You know, after 65, they can travel. After 65, they can leave the country. After 65, they don't care because they're not working for the state anymore. So the state only has use for you until you're 65 years old, basically retirement age. And after that, they don't care. So why would they not care? Because they want you out of the country so they don't have to pay for your retirement that you've earned your whole life.
Exactly.
They don't have to pay for your medical expenses. It's no accident that COVID was purposely brought into the nursing homes of socialist states like Washington and New York. That was not an accident.
Mm-hmm. No.
You know, and in Italy, most of the people that died were over 81 years old. Why? Because the population of Italy is aging. They don't have enough young people to support their population. So if you want to talk genocide, this is gerontocide, whatever, geriatricide.
Yeah.
There's a word for you. It's the killing of old people. So they're trying to wipe out, I do believe.
Yeah, and then on the other side of it is they're sterilizing women. So now the birth rate will be down. So we will be depopulated for a short amount of time because, you know, the women that are getting it, it's going to be hard for them to have children later. So we're going to go through a lull of people, which is what that we need or we want that per their numbers, you know? So
well, have you heard about those stillborn deaths? The women who get the vaccine when they're pregnant, they're having stillborn. Most of those kids are dying before
that's
they're
what
born.
Dealing with. Yeah, that's what we're dealing with. I'm working with Dr. Jim Thorpe, and he's the one that he got interviewed by Dr. Northrup and about how they're seeing like 80. It's the ridiculous where they used to see 30 a year. They're seeing like 300 stillbirths and or deformities and moms having complications here in birth. And he's coming after the OBGYN board. It's awesome because they have the blood is on their hands. They have forced these doctors to tell the mom that it's okay. And then today they are now recalling Tylenol during your pregnancy. And so here we are again, so they tell you it's safe and effective. And then just like the shot, it's safe and effective. Take it. Oh yeah. And take Tylenol when you have a fever too. And now it's saying if you or a loved one have ever been damaged by Tylenol during pregnancy, you're, for compensation. And that's what it's going to be. And then the recall on the batches will be next. So they're finding out, which is what they did. It was Russian roulette. They gave out certain batches to certain places to see what batches were worse. And those are the people that are – so you and me could have the same, group of friends and be like, well, so-and-so got the shot, and they died, and they were completely healthy. And then so-and-so got the shot, and he's obese and – unhealthy and he's fine because it's different batches and that's what they're trying out. And so now
Tuesday. Yeah. I'd never heard that before. So I was a little skeptical that they had different batches because I'm thinking, how would they organize that transportation wise? They'd have to have codes, they'd have to have distribution codes, they'd have to have lot numbers, they'd have to do all that stuff. And anybody can read the labels. You guys can go into the doctor's office and start reading labels and you guys can match up with different people across the country and see what the lot labels are. Because we know that comorbidity, the approved vaccine that they haven't made yet, we're still on the experiment. Mm-hmm. Now, are they still making the experimental one, or have all those already been developed? All been made.
So
if they're still making experimental ones, then for liability. Yeah. Now, how do you know that there's different lots and there's different formulas for this? I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm confused as to how they would actually logistically put that together. And not have anybody.
Yeah,
that
was just the thing. The article read it was like that. They clearly stated that 5% of the batches have caused so many percentages of the deaths and injuries. So
can we get those numbers out there? If we could publish those numbers as the bad batches, then we could, we could save a lot of people.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is that's what they banked on is that the people getting the shot don't care to ask questions. They don't even want a vaccine. And, so they banked on that, just like they bank on, what happened the other day and it blew my mind. Oh, a friend of ours, he had a horrible, horrible motorcycle accident, dirt bike accident, and the face of the helmet broke away when he hit the ground, like completely broke away. That's why he gave him brain damage. Well, if you read in their trials, that's the way that the helmet is meant to do. It's meant to break away in the front of the face to keep from breaking your orbital or whatever. Well, nobody read that. They just trusted the helmet and bought the helmet. But they put the study out there, and so once you start researching and looking, it's like, why would anybody buy this helmet? But it's a bail, and people, you know, famous people wear a bail, so put a bail on, and they just see how far they can go. And then they have lawyers for lawsuits. So it's the same thing with the vaccine. They know all of these batches and stuff are labeled, and they probably have a number, and they probably have a code that you could scan that tells you where it came from. But nobody cares, and nobody asks, because they don't think that they need that information.
Until you know who might be able to help us with this is Cindy. Cindy Cagle, who knows people in the health profession. She does the Medical Freedom Report. She'll be on tomorrow. We could ask her about a lot. I'm writing this down. Lot number search. You know, of the people that are, you know, and the health professionals can do this themselves. They can start, you know, notating the lot numbers of the vaccines that are available.
Yeah.
Huh. Let's see what we can find out about that. All right.
I don't know if you remember Dr. Judy talked about that for a short amount of time. She said that, you know.
She's been on the show.
Yes. So she talked about how the folders for the trials that they went through had numbers on them. And then she found out what her number was, and she was one of the trial for, like, to give you a disease. And I can't remember but it was like this whole thing to where it's just a number. And they put the number on the shot, and whoever gets it gets it, and it's Russian roulette. And so they're doing that with America. They're doing that all over the world. And I think
We need like a whistleblower that will distribute the chart of what the code, what the lot number codes are. Yeah.
Yes, they do. And then again, I mean, you know, people have already, they probably put those out first. They were like, let's get all the bad ones out first. That's just speculation, but let's see how this goes, you know? But where we need to get to is that there is the ability to recover from this. And if you are waking up, and if you've had the vaccine, shot, whatever, and you're having all the issues that may or may not come from the shot, but you don't know why you feel bad, or your hair's falling out, or you've got skin rashes, or you can't sleep, you have to get on top of it. And that's what I try to educate people on is, you know, avoiding certain foods, avoiding certain environmental toxins like Lysol and bleach, so that your lungs can heal. Getting in a sauna and detoxing at least once a week, three times a week would be preferable, but most people don't have that time. Taking hot baths, applying magnesium. So there's things that you can start getting the body to be like, okay, let me see if I can reject as much as this, because that's what the body will do. It's trying to reject all the harmful chemicals that's in the shot. But if we just keep going about our day and we don't do things
let's talk
to help
about that.
It,
Let's talk about that, because things like hand sanitizer, and Josie's big on Lysol. She does her whole house in Lysol, and you're probably cringing if you heard that, but we talked about that yesterday. And so these disinfectants, they're not actually necessary. I mean, soap, which is, you know, one of the most natural, you know, just pure soap. I'm not talking about, you know, with all the chemical additives, but soap itself is one of the best disinfectants out there, right? Or no?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because it's just about the scrubbing. It's just about the movement, the oxygenation, the water. I mean, yeah, I guess if you're dealing with you know, chicken or feces or something, maybe blood, but you still shouldn't get that on your hands. You should try to, you know, the hands and the triclosan, the hand, you know, Lysol and all that. But
well,
I mean, it even says on the can to spray and walk away, but people are spraying it in the air and then like walking through it and breathing it.
See, I hate the smell of bleach juice. I don't have any bleach around because I can't stand stuff. Yeah, all right, let's do it. Let's do a very specific vaccine recovery program, you know. So you mentioned, you know, saunas and magnesium. Where, why, and where do you find them, and what foods are they in? So if you, you know, in the time you have here, if you had a very specific that people can take and go, oh, I can follow this program. If you were to put together a vaccine recovery program using natural stuff, what would be in it?
Yeah. Oh God, so it's based off the person. I know every natural doctor says that, but the number one thing is if you can't get to a sauna, and if I'm talking locally, you know, there's two of them in Milton and Pace that I know of. But the hot bath with 2 cups of Epsom salt, 1 cup of baking soda, and you soak for 40 minutes. And depending on your health, if you're one of those people, I would just say 3 times a week, because I don't know who you are. And then CBD, which no one wants to, you know, half the people are like, nope, can't take it. My boss won't let me. But
oh, the marijuana derivative? Yeah, let's talk about that.
But it's not. Like, it's cannabis, but it has no THC. So the education on that blows my mind. Even Dr. Judy Mikovits, if I have to keep coming back to it, she said you should be grabbing your kid by the nape of the neck every morning and putting CBD on the base of his spine and his head. Like, it's not a drug. It's not a drug. They want to call it a drug because it helps. So, yeah, but they'll shoot an 11-year-old up with aluminum and mercury. So that would be number two. And if you don't like that, I can't help. I don't know what to do for that. And then applying the magnesium, which would be a skin magnesium, like a gel or a lotion, to the bottom of your feet and your abdomen at night. And then your vitamin D level needs to be above 70. So people aren't going to, I mean, if they haven't got tested, they just need to take vitamin D. But it needs to be a high quality vitamin D.
Can you give me a range of, is it by weight, or how do you determine how much vitamin D is good?
Oh, it's 10,000 IUs a day when you're trying to build up your vitamin D, and it doesn't matter how big you are, but 10,000 IUs a day.
That's international units, folks. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, and it's preferably in a sublingual, like a drop, like liquid, versus a capsule.
Sublingual would be under the tongue, I'm guessing?
Under the tongue, or they even have droppers that will go on your tongue, and that's the one I use. It's like a milky texture. And then go down to 5,000 IUs a day once you know your levels are above 70. And then if you start, you come in contact or you start feeling sick, go back up to 10,000.
Okay.
And some doctors are going to say I'm crazy for that, but that's where we're at.
Well, the doctors that think that remdesivir and ventilators are a great way to go, yet the death rate is 97% to 99%. So just because someone's a doctor doesn't mean anything. You know, and this is when the leftists, we used to have a liberal on the show, would call in and say, well, are you a doctor? I said, no, I'm not, but I haven't killed anybody either. You know.
Love it.
Yeah, and it's like, well, do you know as much as the Supreme Court justice? Well, it depends what we're talking about in terms of the Constitution. If I've read it and they haven't, then yes, I do. You know, so all these, you know, so just because you don't have the title after your name, the degree after your name, look at Dr. Fascist. He's killed more people than the Civil War, and he actually has a medical degree. You know, so what does that prove?
I know. It's sad.
Yeah.
It's really sad. But, yeah, those are the things. And then, I mean, there's so many more, like a probiotic, a prebiotic together, because your gut's being destroyed.
Probiotics do what?
For that.
Probiotics create bacteria, right? The probiotics enhance good bacteria?
Yes, good and bad bacteria balanced. And too many people are taking too many bad pro and prebiotics, so I always tell people
what are some bad ones? What are some good ones? I think Fiaki wants to join us here for a second. What are bad probiotics and what are good probiotics?
Well, it's for that person. So they're just going out and buying a probiotic or a prebiotic, and they don't know. So I have no idea what – there's no, like, the brand isn't bad. Well, there is bad
brands. It's not
that
simple.
But I don't
– okay.
But no, not at all.
Okay.
And too many people are like, oh, well, I eat yogurt, like we talked about. I eat yogurt every morning. I'm fine. And I'm like, no, that's just, like, 4 ounces of dairy that you consumed and you don't know where it came from. Not everybody, but I'm saying, like – I eat my yogurt, and it's like Yoplait yogurt. So they think that that's a natural way of helping, and it's not. Yeah. And then essential oils would be next. Essential oils are super powerful, and they're plants. It's all about quality and branding. So that's where we get with all of this. People run out to Walmart and CVS and buy all this stuff, and they're literally just using the bathroom at out, like peeing and using number two at out, because your body doesn't absorb half of it. And so if you've not got a good plant-based, food-based supplement, you're wasting your money. And that's what most of these people are selling. So that's why it's hard to convince someone Yeah, I've been taking my vitamins. I'm taking them daily, and I'm sick. What are you taking? And then they send it to you, and it's sunshine something, you know, or some nature valley, nature made. And I'm like, oh, God, you know. Well, and we were talking about colonics the other day, a friend of mine, and she said, did you know that capsules come out in your colonics? And I said, yeah, if they're not vegetable or, like, clear to where they dissolve, and which is a lot of the capsules. If they're firm and hard and, like, plasticky, your body's not going to break that down for weeks and months even. Who knows? So, yeah.
I've never liked capsules, but fortunately I have a gag reflex that's so strong I can't swallow those things anyway, so it doesn't matter. I have to find alternatives. Yeah, Josie actually texted me. She's saying that the batch numbers are already known and people have already, you know, distributed, and she says that they went to the Republican states, which I find fascinating.
Yeah.
So I'll get her back on to talk about that. Have you heard about that too?
Yeah.
Can you confirm? Okay.
No, but it makes sense. Like, that's what I know. They have a reason. Like, they're not stupid. They did all this, and we're going to slowly find it all out when it's kind of too late. Like, people are going to start finding this stuff out now. And it's like, yeah, well, if you'd have just listened, this is the kind of stuff, if I can explain it the best way, this is the kind of stuff that they want. Conspiracy theorists is what they call us, or whoever, mm-hmm. that, you know, don't know what they're talking about, to have right then. Well, how do you know? Well, how do you know that I shouldn't take this shot? Well, how do you know? And it's like, we just know, just listen to us. And so mm-hmm. then it starts coming out of things of why, and they're like, well, how would you have known that? It didn't come out till now. And it's like, I don't have to know that that was exactly why. I just know that you don't trust these people and you don't do what they say. So we sound crazy when we say that, but then little things come out, and it's like, mm-hmm. oh, well, maybe I should have taken the shot. So it's
hard. Well, let me put it this way.
To,
my example is torture. I don't know. I don't have to be tortured to know that torture hurts. Okay, I know torture hurts.
Exactly.
Okay, the evidence is out there. But also, you've got logic and reason. Is it reasonable to assume that something this profitable and this mandated and this required and this guilt-tripped and this, you know, mass psychosis-induced is actually good for you? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I don't have to. I didn't, you know, I was against vaccines before there even were the vaccines for COVID. I was against vaccines back in February of 2020 when I wrote a bill saying Congress could only spend half their money on vaccines, and at least half or more, preferably, has to be spent on treatments and cures. And I didn't know, I didn't even know the name. I hadn't even heard Moderna, you know, or Pfizer.
Right.
I didn't even know those names yet. And I still knew that this was wrong because we had a cure. So the fact that we had a cure made vaccines moot. I don't have to. It doesn't matter how good the vaccines were. We didn't need them.
Right.
We already had treatments and cures. And I know some people don't like the word cure, but truth is, you know, chloroquine, you know, cures COVID. You know, it does. Yeah.
So that's where we are. Is that people? It's hard because they've been taught to want the facts, and they want, which really aren't facts. But they've been taught to wait. Oh, there's going to come an answer. We're going to get an answer. So if you
there is an
have
answer.
An
people
exact...
are dying. People are dying.
Right.
There's your answer. You want an answer? But, you know, do you have to lose a loved one, you know, or your own life before you realize that there's something bad, really bad going on? And that's the thing. You got to have a little foresight. You got to look a little bit ahead.
Right.
Let me get Pianki, see if he wants to talk to you, because I know you have to go in a couple minutes. Pianki, you want to get into this? Because Chancey does have to leave. Yeah. Pianki?
No, I think that we was talking – you're talking about good biotics. We were talking about making a rejuvenate out of a wheat berry seed. I used to make it, you know, I used to put the berries in a seed, put water over, and put them in a dark spot in the house for about a few days, and take it out, filter it, and, man, that was a good drink. It's
absolutely
good for your body. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and that's just, people just need to – I don't know. I don't want to say it's hard, but I think I've just had a hard week of people not wanting to listen, and then they want to know an exact article type, you know, number, third line of this that tells them that this is going to cure this in 5 weeks and everything's going to be okay, when they didn't look for that with the shot. So that's where it's very, you see how strong the hold is that they – now they understand that they may have made a mistake, and so now they're even more like, oh, well, you got to prove it to me, versus when it was about taking the shot, they didn't have to be proven. So now you have a holistic natural people trying to help people, and they don't want to listen because they're scared. They're, well, my doctor told me to do that, and I did, and then this happened, you know. like, well, I'm sorry, I'm not your doctor, and I've been trying to tell you for 2 years not to do this. So,
you know what
yeah.
the problem? You know what the big problem is, Chelsea? The big problem is that these government schools do not prepare children
yes.
so that they can be
yes.
they can operate function in the world, and we depend too much for government, own government.
Yes.
And
own government.
That's a bad position to be in.
It is. I was talking to an ex-Navy pilot yesterday, and he said that. He said, I know I'm a veteran, and he said, I know all the things. He said, and I appreciate everything that they do for us. He said, but now you've got all of this free stuff being handed out to people because they fought for our country, which should, but that is not how it should be. Like, those people fought for our country, and that is wonderful, but that doesn't mean that their kid gets to go to any school in the world if they're a failing child. So then you have Sally and Joe paying expensive money for their kid to go to this private school, but because Jim is the son of a veteran, he gets to also go to that school. So you're messing up the entire, you're just free stuff to everybody. And he said, that's the problem. He said, go back, take away public schooling, go to private schooling, or so-and-so pays to get so-and-so's mom to teach them math. And that's really where we're going to have to go, because they're being brainwashed. Like, they're being indoctrinated to believe garbage. Like, the people that I would hire in my spa couldn't cash a check. They couldn't answer a phone. And so I saw it from age 17 to 25. It did not matter. You know, they just had no common sense. And then the stuff that they would tell you that they were learning was not accurate. But, you know, here we are. I don't know. And nothing to get vet. Please take nothing against the veteran thing. It was just fun. It was just interesting to hear it from someone. He was like, no, I'm appreciative of everything they do for us. You know, I've everything. But that is where we're at, is that they just like to slap that on it and say, well, you know, we've got to give this free stuff to all these people because they're impoverished or they did something for us. And that's not how it should be. So there's that. And I've ended on a good note, I hope. But if you need anything, I'm here. I can help you with supplements. I can help you with CBD. I can help you get your medical cannabis card. I can do pretty much anything that you're willing to have happen. But I don't know. It's gonna get serious, and your health is the only thing that you have control over. The saying is, be fearless and free, because that's the only thing that they can't take from you. Just act, play, and be fearless, and they can't take that away from you if you just do it. So I hope that's
sounds
okay
good.
To say.
Where do we reach you? Where's your contact information, Facebook
it
page,
things like that? It is ChanceyTerry.com. Yeah, ChanceyTerry.com, and you can find it all there. So
there you go. Got to get that out there.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
I was just in the back.
Well, thank you, Greg. And
you had a great discussion. Yeah, so that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I love Bianchi. Thank you for your input. I hope I did not cut you off or say anything that you didn't agree with, but thanks again.
Oh, you can say things we don't agree
thank
with.
You.
That's part of the fun.
I know. I just...
oh,
she looked very good.
Y'all
have a wonderful day.
Okay, thanks,
Nancy. Thank
yeah,
you.
We'll
y'all have a good day.
We'll talk soon again.
Take care.
Thank you. Yes. Thank
okay,
you.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank
all
you.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Okay, right now. We haven't figured out our goodbyes yet. It's easy to get people on the show. But I haven't figured out, like, closing lines and things like that. I think I'll teach everybody a tagline. You know, she'll say, this is Chancey Terry for, you know, ChanceyTerry.com or something like that. We'll work out those little details. See, people don't realize we're all amateurs here. You know, although I probably have the most professional radio experience, actually having worked for a station for a year and 4 months, the people that are on the show, the reporters, the guests, we're not professionals. You know, you look at the big talk shows, they have the same 20 people, you know, making the circuit. And they're all that's what they do. They do talk shows. You know, we don't do that. We actually have real people doing real things, and this is why they have to go and you know, do real jobs. and so this is my real
Chancy,
job. But yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
Chancy is so knowledgeable. And the things that she says, she brings it to you in a spiritual way at the same time. So I really enjoy her.
Well, yeah, I'll pass that on to her as well. But yeah, that's the thing. Everybody here, the people that come to this show, this is a very unusual show. I've listened to a lot of talk shows, you know, both on Blog Talk and just regular commercial radio. They're very similar. in the fact that, you know, it's like, what do we complain about today? And it just kind of ends there. And they don't really reach into the depths, like why? What are the whys behind it? What can we do about it? That's the difference between action radio and talk radio. Like my folks I had on this morning, and I hope you get a chance to go back and check out the podcast. So Matt and Kat Racing Report, actually Cindy Ann Scott and Matt Scott, husband and wife team. She drives, he does the, he designs the cars, keeps them running and does the mechanical stuff. Fascinating group. In fact, we're hoping to, I can do a lot more with them in terms of racing, but also in terms of my creative car act, because cars are boring. So Matt came up with this, you know, make cars great again. And so just spontaneously out of nowhere, all the stuff we talked about, we were out for an hour and a half. It was great, you know, and that is some of the other stuff that goes into the show. But just the idea of we've opened up this entire new avenue, this entire new group, this entire new, you know, spirit for the show of our cars. I mean, Americans, if we are one thing, you know, we love our cars and they're boring. And it's like the whole society, the government, society creation is, you know, education is boring. You know, I think we're literally being bored to death. In fact, I might do a show on that. I like that idea, bored to death. I'm going to put it down here, bored to death show. But we are. You look at everything that's going on. You can't travel. You got to wear a mask. You know, the school is boring. It's online stuff. You know, they're taking away racing. They want to close down. They're not closing down racing. They're closing down the raceways. Tracks are closing. Just like small airports are closing. You know, taking away our fun. The things are too expensive. Gas is too expensive. You know, anything that takes away our fun and our creativity and our spirit and our adventure and our competitiveness is being systematically done away with. You know, conform. You know, take the shot. You know, take the mask. You know, I wrote a thing on Facebook. I'd be curious what you do this. I said, if you wear a mask and you know it doesn't work, you're an idiot. I said, if you wear a mask and you don't know that it doesn't work, you're an idiot. So either way, you're an idiot. You know, the nation of sheep is growing. There's too many sheep, not enough wolves, not enough adventurers, not enough eagles soaring high. Way too many lemmings taking the shot and jumping off the cliff. Pianki?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening.
Oh, I know. I'm just ranting. But I don't want to do a monologue for too long. But yeah, so we're open now. Anybody else wants to join us? 215-383-3832. We have after a 3-hour whirlwind of a show, you know, chances, you see, I like to have her on for an hour because she is so knowledgeable. So she had to leave a little early today, but, this is why I rescheduled and shuffled things around a little bit so that she would have an hour to talk if she had the time to do so. But yeah, you look at the whole wellness thing, you know, why are people more willing to take a jab because some government official, it's like cult of the expert. You know, if someone has something, you know, people are more willing to believe Dr. Fascist than the doctor that cured them, you know, or like if you have a neighbor that...
they've been made scared to death is what it is. They've been frightened. As people
scared to
die.
So what's the difference between them and us? How come you and I aren't scared and these people are terrified?
Because we know better. And you
is
know another
simple?
Thing, too, and I hate to say this.
Okay.
People today are living with a lot of life-threatening conditions through medication. They over-medicated.
Right.
And rather than use the natural way of preventing yourself, you know, your diet and exercise and so on and so on, they're relying on these medicines.
You know, it's interesting. Our life's
been,
is the first time when our lifespan has actually been reduced. We're actually living shorter than we did, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. So it's not a big change, but there is a change. Lifespans are actually slowly being reduced. And you look at people, you know, in the 1800s, you know, 30 was a pretty good age to reach. You know, people, being a grandparent was huge. You know, there's so few. If you lived to 50 in the 1800s, you were old. I mean, really old. And with me, that would have been, you know, 12 years before I got my, you know, my first really enjoyable career, which is, you know, radio host. Well, not that, but in other words, I was 57 when I started WBY. But I was in my late 50s when I finally got a job I really liked. You know, but in the 1800s, I would have been dead for 10 years or more. You know,
well,
so the lifespan's increasing, but are we living better? That's the question I wanted to get to. We're living longer, but are we living better?
Well, one of the things that helped mankind to live longer in the developed world was the internal combustion engine.
Yeah. Wait a minute, that makes carbon dioxide. Oh no. Yeah.
Well, yeah, yeah. In terms of combustion engine, took a lot of work off your body.
Yeah.
Horses was happy to see it.
They didn't have to pull wagons anymore. Well, let's explore this for a minute. I think you're onto something. But and this is something that the wacko environmentalists and leftists would scream at. But the internal combustion engines save lives. So the question is, people that worked the fields behind a mule and a plow, the people that built their log cabin, were these people were really strong. So were we literally working people to death in the 16, 17, and 1800s? And is that why they died at a young age, but they were actually healthier than we were? Is that possible?
They would work to death, Greg.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. I never thought about it, but that's a fascinating revelation.
Yeah, they would work to death. Plowing a field in order to grow food for consumption, that was a hard task.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the internal combustion engine, where would we be in the wars against our enemies?
Oh yeah, you got to figure the airplane, the ship, you know, the car, the factory. You know, internal combustion engines, and they're newer engines now. They're better engines, but you know, they're hybrids and they're electric and things like that. And it's fascinating what's going on. But you look at the history. How about the steam engine?
Steam
is one of the most powerful things out there.
Horse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It
remember?
Lead, though.
What was that?
I said the steam engine finally had to meet its demise, I guess, here in this country in the late 40s, going into the early 50s.
It wasn't practical for it to light a boiler and have something that can blow up in your face. You know, that's why the riverboats had problems. The riverboat steam engines blew up, and when they blew up, of course, the whole ship was wood, and the thing it was like tinder, you know. So that's why the old riverboats, the steamboats, were risky, because they're, you know, you have a wooden steamboat with a boiler, you know, boiling water with an open flame, you know, to heat up the water. But steam itself is incredibly powerful. The Stanley steamer, you know, late 18, early 1900s, was winning all the races, but it took a while to get the water cooking. So I remember Jay Leno and his Jay Leno's Garage. He actually had an episode with a Stanley steamer. You know, he drove one.
Yeah, look
like,
at
whoa.
Turbo.
What's that?
Andy Granatelli. Remember him?
No, I don't. Who's he? I mean, I've heard the name, but I'm not familiar with him.
He had a turbo car in the Indianapolis 500. He was even sponsored. It had something to do with STP.
Huh.
The oil treatment.
Right. Does that actually work, or is that just a marketing thing?
Did it actually work? Yeah, well, winning all the races. I think they had
No, it was the STP. I mean, these oil treatments. Do they actually do anything, or are they just fluff?
STP is an oil treatment, yes.
And it does work?
It increases the it thickens the oil.
Well, you can say viscosity. I know what you mean.
Yeah, I was going to say viscosity, but you never know who's listening.
Well, you know, and that's what this is. And in fact, I bug people with this too, because especially, you know, like Cindy and Matt, you know, they know racing jargon, so I had to stop them, you know, and this is about nitrous. And I said, well, you better explain what nitrous is to people, and so they know, you know, the whys and the wherefores and things like that. Everybody has their own jargon, and so a lot of times I will, you know, include that. But for those that don't know, viscosity means thickness, but it sounds more fun to say viscosity. So we do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what the greatest? You know what the most marvelous invention of was aviation here in this country. Look how far we've come. But, you know, we kind of came to a stalemate, though.
What's
wouldn't
that?
You think?
In terms of what?
As far as development in aviation, I think we
I got to send you some material. In fact, aviation's about to explode wide open again. Yeah, these airplanes coming out of Europe. So we have what's called a light sport aircraft category here in the United States. Well, Europe has one too. But in the United States, it's so limited, the planes are boring because, once again, government's involved. And so whereas I think it's limited to 100 horsepower, you've got two passengers, you're limited to 10,000 feet. You know, you're limited to daylight visual flying, which we call VFR, visual flight rules. Now, in Europe, they're limited, and you have to have a low stalling speed. In other words, where the air you know, the air doesn't move over the top of the wing, you know, smoothly, so the wing actually loses its lift, and the only way to get it going again is to lower the nose and get the air going back over the top of the wing again. And that's called a stall. The engine doesn't stall an airplane, the wing does. And we'll explain that sometime. Read my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. It's all there. Everything's there. But in terms of where was I going with this? See, I get started on one thing and I completely forget what I was talking about. Oh, aviation renaissance. There we go. Thank you. So what's happening is now Europe doesn't have the same restrictions. They don't have the same stall speed restrictions. I think the horsepower is a little more generous. They have a larger fuel tank. They've got these airplanes, these really light sport aircraft that weigh, you know, 800 pounds. Okay, that's like the load on a general aviation aircraft. They're 800 pounds, and they got these 100, 110, 120 horsepower or 150 horsepower Rotax engines, which is an ultralight engine. These things are doing 200 miles an hour. Okay? Mm-hmm. They're blowing away everything else. Yeah, the LVR, I think. Well, I'll post it on my Facebook page. I'll put it in the Action Radio groups, and everybody can see it. I'll put it on my page, the Complete Guide to Flight Instruction page. But they have these wonderful airplanes coming out of Europe. And AOPA is actually doing something right this time, other than, you know, they never reviewed my book? The chief reviewer of my book came out in the early 90s, said this is a worthless diatribe of your own opinions. And yet they took virtually every idea that I talked about and incorporated it into their flight training, their FIRCs, their flight instructor refresher courses. She's talking about, stealing ideas. You know, they pulled a Fauci on me. So I know how Judy Mikovits feels, because basically AOPA and a lot of these other folks, they took all the things I talked about in the early 90s and said, hey, we got a great new idea. I said, yeah, and I know where you got it from. I said it, that's a great old idea. It was a new idea when I wrote it. You know, it's kind of funny. Yeah. But anyway, but I think
aviation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Yeah. But aviation is going through a huge renaissance. They got to make it cheaper, though. These airplanes are like $200,000. That's the problem.
Yeah, they are real expensive. But you know, the mode of air transportation for civilian is going to kind of mimic the Jetsons.
Yeah, we fly drones.
You remember
they have personal drones now. You can fly a drone with like 8 propellers, battery-powered drone.
Yeah,
and
you don't
you
get your head cut off when you step outside. Can you imagine somebody coming from the bar?
Well, you think the driving accidents are bad. Wait till everybody's flying a drone. You know, with no traffic rules and nobody, you know, with no radio communication. And at least pilots, you know, the one thing about aviation, I think the FAA did a pretty good job with training. I think they could have done a better job. That's why I wrote a book. But as far as aviation training goes, to be able to put somebody in an airplane, especially as little as most private pilots fly, and not have the accident rate worse than it is, training's not too bad.
Well, we have a great safety rate. But let's stay on the Jetsons for a minute.
Okay.
If you don't mind.
I don't because mind. Here's George Jetson.
One thing. One thing that they're going to have is a vectored space similar to what we have already. And we just imagine you take off from your front yard, you go up to a certain altitude, which is going to be below, I guess, what's space C? About 1,200 feet, even lower.
No, I'd say 500. You probably have to keep it around 500 feet, except in big cities, because there are buildings that are taller than that. But for the most part, but you don't want drones flying around big cities anyway, because there's too many obstructions. But if you can have like a drone pad or drone flying, I think, because you got airplanes at traffic patterns start at 700 feet, 7 up to about 1,200 feet for some of the bigger airports. But, you know, 700 to 1,000 is where most of the traffic patterns are. So you need drones. Mm-hmm. If you're going to put a drone, you better be at 500 or below, I'm guessing, you know, and have travel lanes.
Yeah, okay, yeah, right. Travel lanes, well, I guess we can call them that up there in the air. And then you have side lanes in order, similar to your side streets off of a main street. Off of Broadway, you got these side streets. So it would be that sort of pattern.
Mm-hmm. You probably have to have a differential altitude, too. Like in aviation, if you're flying at odd altitudes, you fly east at odd altitudes, you fly west at even altitudes. Unless I've forgotten that.
Yeah, like lanes on a highway.
Exactly. So in other words, most general aviation traffic, a lot of collisions are avoided because the ones heading east are at, it starts at 3,000 feet. So 35, 55, 75, some at 95. But, you know, 35, 55 to 7,500 feet is where most of the visual eastbound traffic is flying. The westbound traffic is flying at 45, 65, and 85, 100 feet. Oh, 30, you know, and a lot of people are flying at 3,000, which is stupid. It's too low. Your engines don't really perform. The engines perform best at 8,000 feet if they're non-turbocharged. That's just a fact. I discovered that, you know, by looking at my gas tank after a series of flights. But, yeah, so you got to figure it. And the same thing would have to be true for drones. So, in other words, you want your western traffic maybe at 500 feet and your eastern traffic at 300 feet. So you got 200 feet separation, which means you need altimeters. Now, can altimeters be put on your cell phones, for example?
Well, I wouldn't trust none of them on cell phone. I really have one fixed.
Okay, so we need some kind of altitude measuring device. It's got to be pressure, so it doesn't take into account the terrain. Because we're not going, you know, they might have to get into above ground level. You know, in Denver, what are you going to do? They're 5,000 feet, so you have to have some kind of a way to measure above ground, or you have charts that say.
Well, you know, another thing that you have obstructions like our radio towers that go up 1,200 feet above the ground.
Exactly. So you got to have drone charts. You have to have flyways. So you'd have drone ways. So if you're going to fly your personal drone, it's you're going to be like a pilot, you know, and people don't think about this. They say, oh, it'd be great. I'll just hop in and go. Well, that's okay if you're the only one. Yeah, but that's not going to be the case. So
what
are
they
going to
do with the night transportation?
Yeah, I don't think you can fly them at night. You know, and are they going to need a transponder? You know, if they're going to fly through congested areas, or is this only for rural travel?
Well, they'll have to have something to show their position where they are. Of course, now with that type of vehicle, you just come straight down and land on a target parking lot.
Uh-huh. So you get bad weather. You know, you get rain, you know, next to you. You can just come down and land in the parking lot. Exactly. People are reluctant to do that because they want to go where dinner is. You know, they want to land at home. But these things aren't flying that big a distance. I don't think that's going to be an issue. You know, of all the things I thought I was going to talk about this morning, drone airways wasn't one of them.
But you know, another thing too now, just like I make mention about in our gun legislation, we need to start including words like phasers, like we see on Star Trek, because those are going to be a thing of the future. And we need to put them in there, get them in there now, because as government do, they would try to control the hell out of them.
Now, in the same way that free speech doesn't mean a quill pen, it means a cell phone. The same way that
it doesn't mean,
you know,
it doesn't
when they
mean
say
an
that,
eagle feather. You're right.
Yeah, the Constitution is not frozen in time. It was meant to live for not as a living document, but in other words, the Constitution was not set. There's no technological freeze in 1789. That whatever was the technology then, that's what the Constitution referred to. That's just irrational. What the Constitution refers to is human behavior. And when they talk about rights, you know, machines don't have rights. Tools don't have rights. Guns don't have rights. People do. Okay? So if you have a right to something, regardless of what level of technology it is, you have a right to it. So in other words, do you have a right to own a fully automatic machine gun? Yes, you do. But that can kill a whole bunch of people. Yes, it can. But that's a criminal action. That's not what we're talking about. You never limit the rights of people based on what the most evil people in the world will do. If we did that, we'd never have steak knives. We'd never have baseball bats. We'd never have chainsaws. We'd never have cars. We'd never
have
alcohol.
Airplanes.
We wouldn't have airplanes. Yeah. We wouldn't have anything that anybody could – you can use anything – pencils. You wouldn't. People can have been killed with pencils. I saw it in a movie once. It must be real. You know. But the point is, it's not the use of things. It's the misuse, the criminal use that's not covered by the Constitution. So the Constitution absolutely – the Second Amendment absolutely covers fully automatic machine guns with a 100-round magazine. Okay. But it all depends on what you do with it. If you put it on your wall, fully loaded, safety on, it's legal. If you go around and kill people with it, it's not legal, obviously, because it's illegal to kill people, no matter what you use. So once you can distinguish that, once you can make the distinction between the legal, and this is what the left does all the time, the reason they justify their gun control is that they actually blurred the distinction between legal and illegal uses of guns. And try to make you think that all uses of guns are illegal or dangerous. That's how they do it.
Well, I hear people talking about doing away with the Constitution. If you did away with the Constitution, then if you killed somebody, there's no repercussion.
That's insane. That's ridiculous. I mean, states have police powers, you know, and the Constitution only covers the federal government. You still have the states. You still have state law.
Oh, you know what I was going to ask you? I keep hearing people talking about in the election recount when they was the challenges, the court challenges,
right,
and that how 60 courts turned away. What's your
no.
I know what I've been telling.
Right. What have you been telling them?
What's your explanation? Well, I told them that I told them the issue should have went back to the states. So what would you say?
Well, it depends. Well, first of all, the state legislatures have jurisdiction over elections, federal elections. That's right in the Constitution, Article 1, I believe. But what's happening is the courts, and this is a Jonathan Mosley question. He knows more about this. But quite honestly, the courts are not considering the evidence. They're not even looking at it. So they're not saying – see, people are saying that the courts have turned down the evidence because there isn't any. That's not true. What's true is they're not looking at it. They don't want to look at the evidence. They don't want to be in a position of seeing fraud because then they'll have to do something about it. And as Jonathan explains, you know, most judges and most lawyers are weenies. I mean, you know, openly calls them weenies on the show. It's hysterical. So that's what the problem is. So if you don't look at the evidence, if you say that you don't have standing, for example, you know, standing is this mythical thing that the courts made up. In other words, you have to have a cause to sue. You have to have been damaged in some way. And if you can't prove that you've been damaged in some way, then you don't have standing. If you don't have standing, you can't sue. Well, what if you can't prove that that your vote was taken by an illegal alien? You don't have to do that. You don't have to find the illegal alien that took your vote. All you have to say is that there's vote fraud. You know, standing is another concept that the courts use to dismiss cases they have to take. The Supreme Court had to take the Texas case when they said that the other states have disenfranchised their voters by letting illegal people vote. Both dead people, unregistered, multiple votes, ballot harvesting, mail vote fraud, and everything else like that. That disenfranchised the voters of Texas because those contributed to the Electoral College that put the wrong person in the White House. And the Supreme Court didn't take the case. They didn't have that choice. They were mandated to take that case. Congress should have disbanded that court. They should have removed all the judges except Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito. Maybe Gorsuch. Maybe. But the rest of them certainly should have been immediately removed for bad behavior. They had to take that case. The fact that the Congress didn't do anything about it, the fact that Trump didn't do anything about it as long as he was in office, he should have said something. So the Supreme Court doesn't have that option. They have to take that case. Because it's a controversy between the states.
They
have to take it. Well, they don't have a choice. Go ahead.
Well, then that they didn't, then the other alternative would have been state legislatures of the states that was of concern.
Those states, remember there's seven states that had two-thirds of electors. Yeah. So here's the controversy. There's seven states, and I've still got the article here. I got the bottom of my computer. I'm just waiting to use it at the appropriate time. Let's pull it up right now. We don't have a little bit of time left. But there are seven states that sent both the website is Knightsbridge. It's December 18th, 2020. So it's right after the November election of 2020. This is how it works. Presidential candidates in the United States win elections by winning the most electoral votes. The Electoral College system apportions a certain number of votes to each state. When voters in a state vote for a party's candidate, they are casting a vote for that party's slate of electors. Those electoral votes are counted by Congress. If a candidate gets, yeah, that's what happens, supposed to happen January 6th, right? If a candidate gets 270 or more, he or she, win the presidency. Now, it says here on the 14th, on the 14th of December, seven states set a slate of Democrat electors. This is badly written. It says on 14 December, seven states sent a slate of Democratic electors, chose Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden. Republican electors also cast votes for President Trump, thus creating seven sets of dueling electors or alternates. Excuse me. This one's hard to read. Both groups are sending certificates of ascertainment to Congress, which is slated to convene in a joint session on January 6, 2021, to count electoral votes. See, what was really supposed to happen January 6th, and this gets lost all the time, is that the electors, the Trump electors, which were sent by the state legislatures, the true ones, and the fraudulent ones sent by the governors and the secretaries of state, the Brandon electors, were supposed to be separated and counted and sent back to the states, and then the states would have certified their state electors, the state legislatures would have certified the Trump electors and sent them to Congress. Mike Pence should have done that. He was duty-bound. He was required by the Constitution to send those multiple state electors back. He didn't do that. So he, as much as anybody else, is responsible for the Brandon treasonous coup. So people don't get that. This is why we are in the situation we're in, because the people that were supposed to send the electors back to the states, if you have a state that has electors and Brandon electors, you can only have one set of electors. You can't do that. So it was the responsibility of Congress to send them back. Now, that's why they had people walk into the Capitol to stop that from happening. Mike Pence stopped that from happening. The deep state stopped that from happening. You know, all the different things, the January 6th committee is stopping January 6th from actually happening. We still haven't had January 6th yet. We're still in a state of multiple electors from the states that we all know. Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Nevada, New Mexico, and Arizona. Those are the seven battleground states where all the controversies are, where all the fraudulent electors are. That's why the Democrat, Brandon, Secretary of State, Governor electors don't count. They're the fraud ones.
Well, that's why those arguments, which are controversies, should have went back, like you say, to the state legislature to straighten that mess out.
Yeah, exactly. The state legislature should have wrestled with their governors and sent one set of electors. That's it. See, election 2020
isn't over.
Going to
look at the evidence. The courts weren't going to look at the evidence because they didn't want to be accused of deciding an election.
They have to look at the evidence. That's their job. So in the two seconds we have left, let me just say this, that Mike Pence, you know, didn't do his job. The courts didn't do their job. They all should be impeached and removed from office. You know, the governors that sent fraudulent electors, Secretary of State, they all have to be removed from office. We need a massive purging of people that did not follow the Constitution, that did not do what they were required to do, and that's why we're in the mess we're in now, because the government chose the government.
I go to your Facebook site. I want to read that article. I haven't read that one from that particular author.
Oh, the seven battleground states? I'll post it. I'll post it right away. We got to go. We're off the air. Thank you, Pianki. Thank you, everybody, our new folks, Matt and Cindy, for an incredible day. Chansey as well. I'll be back tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific. And the rest of the world, you guys just figured out. We're at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction, our bill writing site, writeyourlaws.com. And if you want to contribute to Action Radio, paypal.me/actionradio. If you want to be a sponsor, email me at greg@writeyourlaws.com. Back again tomorrow.